All right, Joel Radio, welcome, welcome. Oh, I turned my own mic on. Joel Radio, Joel Fragmenti here, Corey Hall's here.
Hey, everybody.
Welcome to the show. It's finally wrapping up 2012. We're closing the door on it today.
Yeah, enough of that.
We've seen enough of that. Goodbye, 2012.
We might as well recap 2012 because nothing happening in 2013 yet.
Nothing exciting, no. So
apparently the president was inaugurated again.
He was.
I didn't watch any of it.
I took you for watching every second of that. No?
I watch a lot, an unholy amount of political coverage, and actually today I was watching John Kerry's confirmation hearing.
Oh.
I watched a lot of that Hillary Clinton the other day.
Sure.
Which was fun because like Rand Paul was yelling at her and she yelled back at him.
People
was enjoyable.
Waited a long time to yell
those,
at her.
Those political hearings are usually just very dull and nothing happens. That one, there was actually some smoke.
Yeah, well, they always want to bring the guy in, or the girl in this case, and really ream her out. And then, like, it happens, and then you just... Remember Petraeus? They were like, we got to get Petraeus in. And then they found out he was banging chicks. Mm. And then they get him in, and then nothing ever came of that. It was just kind of like, eh.
No, the Clinton one was good. They yelled at her, and she was like, yeah, screw you guys.
Right, exactly. So nothing's going to come of it, though, ultimately. People just want to get them...
No.
They want to just drag them in front of the
They want to make a
point. It's a kangaroo court, yeah.
Because Rand Paul was like, if I was president, I'm like, please. Like, if you were president, we'd be living in an alternate universe of, you know... It would be living in a fairy tale realm.
All right. Well, let's not get carried away with bullshit like politics.
Oh, I know.
Because we have to talk about movies for the whole show today because it's our best of 2012 and worst of 2012.
And I know.
Show.
And if you haven't listened to the TV recap, I don't know why you're listening to this one, but please go back and listen to that.
Yeah, that was a good show.
And remember, next year at this time, when we do the TV recap for 2013,
sure.
And we include the time when America went crazy. For celebrity diving. There's a second diving show.
We talked about that with, I think it was with Rob Rose last time, about celebrity diving. And that show aired and went off and no one watched it. And now there's another one. So what happened? I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know if Fox just hears that somebody's doing it and then they quickly move to like rip it off. See, this is going to get too interesting. We got to save this.
I know, but I'm just saying.
I know.
I'm saying
I know.
Another diving show.
Another diving show.
There's like another celebrity dive. I know January, and it's a good time to look back at 2012 because right now January is the worst time for movies.
Movies are awful in this time of year. Yeah.
There's two dead zones in the calendar, January and August.
Yeah.
Sometimes August is a little better than January, but they're both bad.
Sure, yeah.
This one's really awful. February's not much better, believe me.
February's bad too. So.
And then we'll get eventually, I'm sure. Where is Reese Witherspoon? That's what I want to know.
Oh, put at an APB. She should be putting out a movie.
Katherine Heigl, where are you?
She might be done. They might have got rid of her.
They might have had enough.
That might have been enough for her.
How many times do you get to blow a movie and then just how many times do you just completely?
What's Gerard Butler doing?
He's clinging.
He's hanging by a thread. Yeah.
He is one pube away from elimination. Right. He is hanging by a dick here.
All right, so we did it last year. We got 15 best in. So we're going to try to, that's our goal for today, 15.
Oh, I only got 10. All right,
well,
good.
Can you add, do you have, we talked about this on the phone, about 15.
Yeah, I'll throw a couple.
Do you have honorable mentions or something?
Yeah,
do you
sure,
have,
sure.
So throw those into your best and we'll make it official. So 15 and then we'll do some honorable mentions. I have a most disappointing category.
Oh, well.
And then I have the worst, so I have multiple categories. Now, I will say, as I always do with this, I don't see everything. Corey sees quote-unquote everything, which means basically you saw probably all the stuff that's nominated for the Oscars. You saw most of the stuff that made money. You know what I mean?
I've seen 8 of the 9 Oscar movies.
Sure, all right.
So
yeah, and
the
I,
one just hasn't opened here yet.
And some of those I haven't seen, and so when Corey mentions it, I will say, hey, I maybe didn't see that. And there's probably stuff on here that you didn't see because I saw a lot of this stuff. I don't know what percentage, but some of this was like stuff that was on Netflix that was sort of limited released or maybe even not even theatrically released or, you know, maybe didn't play in Detroit, stuff like that. So, I think we've got you covered from pretty much all ends here. So let's get into it. Do you want to start, or do you need to organize your list? Should I start with 15?
You want to go in reverse order?
We'll go in reverse order. What would you like?
Yeah, you go ahead. Cause
I'll start with number 15, and then you come up with something. And if you don't have something till number 10, that's okay, too. I'll just do five. Well, however you want to do it. Anyway, number 15 is a movie that came out very early last year, and it was called Salmon Fishing in the Yemen.
What?
Yeah. That was a good movie. I talked about it when I saw it. I must have seen that movie last January.
Yeah.
February.
Okay.
That was a good movie. And I remembered it. And
of all the, really?
You know what? I honestly feel like my movies up to a certain point aren't that strong. Like maybe this year wasn't as strong, although I think my top three is awesome. But yeah, Salmon Fishing in the Yemen made the cut here. So,
well, I thought it was pretty mediocre. But all right.
That's why there's two different lists.
The Golden Globes, they got nominated for a Golden
Globe. It did. Well, it was a good movie. It was directed by a guy named Lassie Hellstrom, who's made a lot of good movies that people like. And, you know, it's not, it's, it, look, I'm telling you right now, this is 15, you know, I saw in 2012, of movies that came out in 2012, I probably saw about 50 movies, which you would have seen three times that, probably, twice, at least twice
pretty,
that.
Yeah,
you would have probably seen three a week, right? Let's say.
That's about average.
Okay, so
yeah.
So you saw three times the movies I did. So I can't, but yeah, I mean, you know, look, there's other stuff that will be in my honorable mention that didn't make it in. But Salmon Fishing in the Yemen, nice movie. Emily Blunt and Ewan McGregor, and yeah, it's a romantic comedy, I guess you could say, but it's not a Katherine Heigl, Gerard Butler romantic comedy.
No,
and
thank
that's
God.
Refreshing.
All right,
so it's a little different, and it's got sort of a British sense of humor to it, British sensibility.
Okay, I mean, I like sure. It wasn't an awful movie. Yeah. I just
okay.
Of all the things for you to like, that was not one I.
Well, see, that's why
little,
we do
it's a little
these.
Fusty. All right,
that's why we all do right. These lists. All right, give me a 15.
I'll go with Wanderlust.
Wanderlust,
which was a Paul Rudd, Jennifer Aniston vehicle, sure. Which also featured a lot of the cast of The State.
Ah.
I like those guys. They did, you know, the State hasn't really done an official State reunion, but they're always in each other's stuff.
Okay.
Like Wet Hot American Summer and you know, the Baxter. I enjoyed Wanderlust. I thought we had some really funny stuff. Paul Rudd is just funny doing Paul Rudd stuff.
Sure. Yeah.
Which he'll come up. His name will be mentioned later in another capacity.
Oh.
But
teasing.
Yeah, but Paul Rudd is funny. There's just like one bit where he's just psyching himself up to have sex with Malin Ackerman.
Okay.
And he's just looking in the mirror talking about how he's going to fuck that pussy, and it was good stuff.
Good. Well, I didn't see Wanderlust, so I'll have to check that out.
It's worth a rental. It's sure. Not, look, it's got holes. It's not the best. Yeah. It's, you know, it's
got
like
Malin Ackerman.
Yeah, it's like, it's also got the little redhead from 6 Feet Under.
Lauren Ambrose?
Lauren Ambrose.
Okay.
Who used to prominently feature in the Babe brackets? She was a real,
she's one of yours.
Real contender in my bracket.
Yeah, but we'll talk about another one of her
like,
movies.
She's
later.
She's like pregnant in this.
Okay.
Thing,
yeah.
Which not as good.
Oh.
But she's funny. It's a funny movie. It's worth checking out. I got some good laughs out of Wanderlust. Some people will completely hate Wanderlust.
Yeah.
And won't jibe with that style of comedy, but I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I didn't see it, so the movie.
They go to they're like New York. Uptight, you know, yuppies, and they go, they're like, we're going to chuck it all and go live in the country. And they go down to Atlanta, and they end up stuck on a commune with these completely whacked out
It
hippies.
Sort of sounds like Couples Retreat, which was out a couple years ago, in a sense.
It is similar in concept, but not in delivery. It's
probably more serious tone than that.
Yeah. Wanderlust is a little edgier, and the humor gets a little darker, and I enjoyed it.
All right, good. Well, that's good. That sounds
kind of in the style of Funny Farm. Do you remember Funny Farm with Chevy Chase?
I remember Funny.
Where they go to the idyllic countryside and the people all turn out to be complete whack nuts.
Uh-huh.
This is kind of where the commune
people
seem like it's a loving, embracing commune. And then they're all, can I bang your wife? And they're all, you know, they're very creepy. All right.
All right. My number 14 movie of the year. Now, this was a little indie movie based on a true story called Compliance. Did you see that, Corey?
Compliance is very good.
Yeah, Compliance is real good. If you haven't seen this movie, it's based on a true story about something that happened at a McDonald's in Kentucky. And, you know, I remember hearing the story, and when I heard that they made a movie of it, I had to see it. Because I was like, that's one of the craziest stories ever. I don't want to give away too much, but basically a guy calls in. A guy basically is doing a prank phone call, pretending to be the police officer, and has a restaurant. They fictionalized the restaurant, but he basically has this McDonald's manager strip search an employee, and it gets crazier from there. And it's all about, you know, it questions authority and where people draw the line on what they're willing to do in order to aid the police and all this stuff. And it's good. A couple other notes on it. A guy that's been on this show, Matt Servito, is in this movie very briefly.
Oh, yeah.
Matt Servito, so one of our friends, is I think the first guy you see in this movie.
Matt's a nice guy.
Driving a delivery
truck.
He came
out into the show. And,
yeah, Matt's a nice guy. I saw him in there. And
you might remember him from The Sopranos.
Sopranos, yeah, Matt Servito. He's a truck driver in this movie. He has a very brief scene. But also, if you've the sadly now canceled Don't Trust the Bee in Apartment 23.
Oh, what a shame.
Dreama Walker, the really cute, elfish-looking chick on there, blonde, is the girl who has all of the nakedness done to her by various people.
Yeah, Dreama Walker.
And you see her full boobs and everything, and it's kind of, you know.
There you go.
Although the movie's so creepy, I don't know if you can really jerk off to this movie. I'm not giving it a recommendation based on that. But this is really creepy, and I think you guys should check out Compliance. There's number 14.
It's a good one, sure.
Yeah, yeah. I rented that the other day. That was good.
Yes, sir.
Sure, so that's my 14. Give me a 14.
I'll give you Moonrise Kingdom.
Moonrise.
Which is a Wes Anderson joint, and I understand that most people think that Wes Anderson blows. well, here's the thing. There's no in-between ground on Wes Anderson. You're either all
sure.
on board,
right.
you're all off. This one is not my favorite of his movies.
Right.
And I think the best Wes Anderson movie, the more I look at it, the best Wes Anderson movie is the one in which the lead actor just ignores him.
Yeah.
Which would be Royal Tenenbaums.
Okay.
Where Gene Hackman just went, you know, screw you. I'm going to do what I do.
Yeah.
Because everybody else really buys into this, like, deadpan delivery
yeah.
thing than he does.
Sure.
And they're very low-key. They're very deadpan. They're very...
He has a voice, that Wes Anderson.
That's his tone.
Yeah.
But Royal Tenenbaums, Hackman was like, screw you. I'm going to show you how this is done. That's his best movie. This one, look, even bad Wes Anderson is pretty entertaining. I enjoyed this one. Bruce Willis is in this.
Sure. I saw Moonrise. It's on my piece of paper.
I'm sure it's on the other side.
No, it's actually, I think it is in my honorable mentions. I'll
okay.
be honest
All right.
about that. And here's why it's in my honorable mentions and not in my top. I'm the guy that kind of thinks Wes Anderson is all style, no substance.
Sure.
I think if you like Wes Anderson, I think you probably love this movie, and therefore I would recommend it to a fan of his. I found it, you know, again, a lot of style and pleasant, very pleasantly styled, like very well done in that way. One thing I didn't like about it is he shot this on 16mm, and on Blu-ray, this movie looked like ass. It
Does
just
it?
Looked blurry.
Yeah, I haven't looked at it in Blu-ray.
I'm not sure how to describe it other than it's very soft, and, I mean, it's supposed to look like an old postcard or something.
I think
something.
You shot it on 16 for that very reason.
For that reason, but at the same time, you kind of when you're squinting the whole time, you go, okay. But, you know, I'm not a Wes Anderson fan, and I'm giving it a mild recommendation.
Okay, all right.
So there you go. So even I was won over somewhat.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so Moonrise Kingdom. Here's my number 13, lucky 13.
Yeah.
Is a documentary. I think I have four documentaries on my list. You have documentaries?
I have some
just
documentaries.
Just as a tease?
Sure.
How about this one called The Queen of Versailles?
That is higher on my list.
No, really? So yeah. Corey liked this.
Yeah.
Here's why this is why I assumed when I mentioned this, you were going to, like, you know, throw something at me. Maybe a Cheez-It, maybe something else. I don't know what's around you to throw at me. I already have coffee on me from you, but you didn't throw it. Okay.
Yeah. That was all you, Butterfinger.
You must hate these people in Queen of Versailles.
Oh, yeah.
You must have hated the, like, but the thing is, when you hate people, you often can't enjoy what, you know what I mean? You can't enjoy what they're in. I mean, granted, this is a documentary, so it's not like they were doing a performance or something, but...
What distinguishes this is about a real estate mogul who, his business basically timeshares.
Yeah.
And he built an empire selling people a bad deal on a condo that they rent,
right.
Essentially, and share with other people. So this guy builds this giant empire of timeshares, and then his company's starting to fall apart due to the mortgage crisis. People are overextended. People aren't buying timeshares anymore. And he's in the middle of building this massive house that's going to be the largest private residence in America? Is that what it was?
Yeah, it's based on the Palace of Versailles in France. Yeah. It's the world's largest private residence. And it's largely his wife. That's why I think they get their title, the Queen of Versailles. Mm. Is this wife is this trophy wife who's now aged and plopped out all these kids and spends money like it's fucking water. Like it's, you know.
Yeah.
Like she breathes in air, she spends money, this bitch. And and you know what? The thing about this movie is it's like, I guess the idea was they'd make a documentary about this house. And then it turns into, like, it's really a movie about the, you know, the economic crisis and people losing credit. And you watch this guy. See, that's the thing, is what I liked about it, is in the beginning, the husband and wife are on the same, you know, they're both trying to build this giant house. And they live in a mansion already.
Their home is not small.
Right. They have a mansion in Florida already with gates, and they have a Rolls and a private, you know, and a drive around and stuff. But what I like is that as they start
to
lose,
build this monstrosity on a peninsula, so they have no neighbors and they can just look out at the lake views. And
as this guy's business goes under, he gets become more and more distraught. And the wife could give two fucks. And you see the guy hating his wife and realizing, and he ends up locking himself in his little room. And it's really like, I really felt bad for the guy. Now look, the guy's a billionaire and I'm sure he'd piss on me if he had a fucking chance. But still, it was really nice to see his arc and his change.
That's what distinguishes this movie. Your sympathies shift.
Yeah.
Initially, you think he's a real jerk.
Yeah.
And she's being mistreated.
Uh-huh.
And then you slowly realize what a living hell this guy's life is.
Right.
He's got this wife.
He's a self-made billionaire.
All these kids that are running around with their hands out. And he's even got, like, cousins that are staying with them, you know, like kids that aren't even
he adopted like a niece or something.
Yeah, there's like extra kids hanging around, and I still don't think he was a great guy.
No, you can't, but
your sympathies do lean in his direction.
In that situation, you go, you know, there's a right way to deal with this and a wrong way, and the wife's doing it the wrong way, and so the wife really, I mean, this is sort of they're real housewives on steroids in a sense. You could look at the movie this way, but it's a cautionary tale for our age. The Queen of Versailles.
It really is, but they don't hammer you over the head with it. You really just sort of, all of the analogies are inlaid into the story without it being too heavy. And
billionaires can have money problems too, apparently.
He's got a son that he never really loved who's trying to run his business.
That was sad,
And the son's trying to keep the business afloat, and they're trying to take, they've got this tower in Vegas that this guy's got.
That's a legendary story in and of itself, that Vegas thing, because there were like celebrities who bought the condos, or at least they laid money down on them, and I don't think they ever moved in, but they had all these celebrities committing to like living up there, because I remember reading about that years ago, you know, before the whole thing went belly up, and then the guy has to rent out his Rolls for like weddings. So sad. Anyway, that's, by the way, that's also available on Netflix Instant. So you have Netflix Instant.
Yeah.
You're spending that $8 a month. That's something you can watch right now.
Well, there you go.
There's money well spent. All right, go ahead. Give me 13.
Oh, boy.
On your list.
13. This is going to be a tough one. I'm going to go with The Sessions.
Okay.
Which, you know, Helen Hunt was nominated for. John Hawkes was not nominated for.
Yeah, I didn't see this. This is good.
You know, it's not really my kind of movie. And in fact, I sat there the whole time going, this is not my kind of movie. But I really thought John Hawkes was tremendous. It's about a guy who's a poet and an author who had polio and was in an iron lung. I think it's set in like the late 80s, early 90s. And he's one of the last people that was on an iron lung. Eventually, you know, polio had been cured and eventually they stopped using. They stopped having a facility, you know, needing this this technology, and so those people started dying off. And he's like 37 and never had a woman, so he hires a sex surrogate.
Oh,
which is, you know, Helen Hunt.
Helen Hunt.
She comes in and and makes him a full man.
Back in the late 80s, early 90s, I would have not minded having Helen Hunt.
You know what? I'll tell you. Helen looks good.
Does she? Okay.
She's well preserved.
All right.
She's all sorts of naked in this movie.
No.
They have her naked in scenes where she doesn't even have sex with a guy.
You know, by the way, I hate that trend of when you're no longer marketable, you start getting naked.
Well, this is,
don't know if that's the Meg Ryan trend. Who do you want to credit that
to? Here's how you get an Oscar.
Yeah.
You play cancer.
Yeah.
You play naked.
Sure.
Retarded. You don't go full retard, as we all know, as they said in Tropic Thunder.
Yeah.
You can only go half retard.
Okay.
Or you do what was done in Les Mis by Anne Hathaway, and you shave your head, and you and Naomi Watts did this in The Impossible, and you cover yourself in dirt, and you roll around in filth, and go, look at how much pain I'm in, and then the Academy goes, loved it, give her an Oscar, So,
but the
Sessions is really well done. William H. Macy plays the priest, who can only advise him to some extent because he's like, look, this is out of my area of expertise, but then of course. He's sort of enjoying the guy's stories, like Penthouse Forum. I thought it was a really well done, well made movie.
Yeah, I'm trying to cross reference the Oscar nominations because Helen Hunt is nominated for Best Supporting Actress. That, so, all right, good. I didn't see the Sessions either, so you got another one on me. So, all right, let's go to my number 12, Joel's number 12. Now I have shocking you probably and the rest of our audience. There's a superhero movie. On my list at number 12. And it is not the Spider-Man movie that came out.
Okay.
It is not the Batman movie that came out. It is also not the Avengers, Corey.
Okay.
It is something called Chronicle.
Oh.
Which I don't know if a lot of people saw Chronicle or people. It came out early in the year.
I guess you could technically call it a superhero movie.
It is a superhero movie. It's a found footage movie about high school kids who get superpowers.
Mm-hmm.
And. You know, I think the way they marketed this, they made it look almost like Twilight-y or something. Or I don't know why this movie to me didn't appeal to me on its first run, but I saw it on Blu-ray or whatever, and I thought it was really good. I thought it was very well done, and I thought it was very intense. It got it reminded me of a video game almost. It reminded me a little like of Infamous, if you know Infamous on the PS3,
yes,
where a guy, you know, all of a sudden has powers to control lightning and electrical shit.
They basically have, like, X-Men, like, telekinetic.
Yeah, you could say that, sure, yeah. They have telekinetic, and then they end up, they get more and more powerful as time goes on, and there's a rivalry between the two guys. One guy goes good, one guy's bad. And I thought this was just really well done, you know. I think I don't even know who made this, I don't know anything about it, but I thought... it's definitely worth a look, Chronicle, because I think they marketed this towards like teens or tweens or something, and I don't know. I'm not any of those, obviously, and I thought this was really good. So
Chronicle was an interesting movie, and I didn't have it on my list, but hey, it was for a super cheap movie.
Yeah, right. This movie was not marketed like those other superhero movies, obviously, and I don't even know if it was. They might have played up the found footage thing a little bit too much. Maybe they made it more of Paranormal Activity, sort of for that crowd.
You know, Cloverfield and Paranormal Activity.
Cloverfield was good. But most of the time, those aren't good. We'll get to an awful found footage movie in my worst list this year. But I think you guys should go see Chronicle.
Well, Josh Trank, here's what happens in Hollywood. You direct a movie for nothing.
Yeah.
And the guy Josh Trank, who did this, who had done...
Okay.
Only done some TV before this. Now he's going to do, they're going to reboot the Fantastic Four.
And this guy's in
and
charge.
And he's going to do that.
Well, you know, hey, good for him.
Because now, unfortunately, because those two Fantastic Four movies were lame, they're going to remake those only because 20th Century Fox has to keep the rights or it goes back to Disney.
Oh, yeah?
Because
they didn't get that in
Disney,
something.
Disney bought Marvel, but they already had existing contracts on Spider-Man and Fantastic Four. So now they have to go, and it's terrible. I wish Fox had just given up on it. And went,
well,
we don't know what we're fucking doing, and let Marvel and Disney.
Well,
handle it
when people stop going to these movies, they'll stop making them. Well, I think is
the movies that Marvel Studios made are the good Marvel movies, like Iron Man,
right.
Avengers.
Sure.
And then the Sam Raimi Spider-Man movies, but the other ones are like been dreadful, and mixed results on the X-Men movies too. So, what are you gonna do?
Yeah. But, so anyway, I didn't know the guy was. I don't even know who made this Chronicle, but darn it, go see it because I thought it was better than those other superhero movies I mentioned.
But that's what happens if you make a low budget movie and you do a good job with it. You get another shot, and there was a movie called Monsters.
Yes, that was very good as well. I might have recommended that last year in my
that
best
Monsters
other,
cost
whenever that came
about
out.
$9.
Yeah, that's a cool
and,
movie.
And that was 2010, I guess.
Yeah, I loved it. Whenever that came out, I saw Monsters.
But the guy who did that, Gareth Edwards, is now in line to do Godzilla.
Uh-huh.
So
that'll be good.
So see, you know, you get you
excited.
Know that's what happens. They now they give these movies to you know. You get one shot to go, oh, look how good I am. And then,
well,
you know,
He proved it. All right. Do you have a number 12, Corey?
My number 12 would be, of course, the movie that is probably the lead, the in the front of the line to win an Oscar,
but did
not make my top 10 list. Huh. Lincoln.
Lincoln. All right. Another one I did not see.
And I'm doing it really out of obligation.
Yeah.
Because Lincoln is a very fine movie. It's very well made.
Sure.
And it's a little dry. Yeah. And it's a little dull.
Right.
And it comes, it's very close to going over the edge, you know.
Into not being good or just being a bore or?
Into cloying obnoxiousness. So.
Well, my feeling is I think I know enough about Lincoln. I mean, I'll eventually see this movie, but I didn't feel like I needed to run out and see it. Because when I went to the theater, there was other stuff I wanted to see more than this.
Right.
And so I never got around to it. But
all right.
It is nominated for every friggin' Oscar.
I mean, sir.
Steven Spielberg, that guy, you know, he makes a good movie.
He does. He know what he's doing.
Yeah, Lincoln. All right. That's fine.
All right.
If I might have seen it, I probably would have put it on my top 15. But anyway. All right, we'll stay another documentary. Now, this one was on TV, but I count these anyway. Because it is really made as a feature and eventually I think just sold there. But this was on the PBS American Masters series. It was called Inventing David Geffen.
Really?
Yeah. Did you see this? This is awesome. And David Geffen's a guy that you go, who cares? And then you realize David Geffen did a lot of shit that, like, you know, he was involved with a lot of stuff going way back to, like, the 60s. And, you know, he was involved heavily in the Eagles' career.
He really made his bank and made his stroke off managing Laura Nyro.
Yeah, that's all part of the documentary.
Yeah. So, and Laura Nyro was a singer-songwriter, and she put out albums that are very, they're culty.
Right.
A lot of musicians talk about how great Laura Nyro was.
Sure. She wrote songs for
other
people.
But more importantly, she wrote something like Carole King. She wrote songs for other people.
Yeah.
Carole King, excuse me.
Carole King
was Andy Kaufman's wife.
Carole
Taxi.
King might have.
But yeah.
She might have recorded an album at some point. But anyway.
Yeah. So Laura Nyro's early hits for other people really put money in his coffers.
Well, yeah, that's when he was like a manager, agent, and then he became. And he really sort of is a guy who he like was working in the mailroom. He faked his way into a job in the mailroom at this agency, and then he ended up like producing movies, and then he went back to music. But, you know, the Eagles, here's what his claim to fame is with the Eagles was, you know, he got them together, whatever. But he wanted after, I think, like three albums or four albums, he said, it's time for the Eagles' greatest hits. And the Eagles said, David, go fuck yourself. We're not putting out a greatest hits. He says, let me put out greatest hits. Come on. I will sell a billion fucking greatest hits. And then no greatest hits. Screw you. And he said, I'm putting it out anyway. Mm-hmm. He put out the Eagles' greatest hits. It's the greatest selling album of all time.
There you go.
And then, of course, you know, he made his money. The other thing that was interesting is how he became this billionaire. Because you go like, well, okay, he was, you know, the chat of a record company, but he didn't like own the company. What happened was he owned the Geffen Records was sold. The Japanese gave him, actually what happened was in order to stay, I think it was with MCA, they gave him all this stock. No, listen, this is interesting.
What?
No, well, this is how he became a billionaire. Okay, well, that's all right. You can snore. I'll just turn your mic off. I don't give a fuck. But what's interesting is because he didn't, you know, he only got rich in the early 90s, David Geffen.
Yeah.
He only got to become like this mogul in that time. Because what happened is MCA MCA gave him a bunch of stock to stay with them, to stay under their corporate umbrella. And then what happened is the Japanese bought MCA. So what they gave him became worth like 10 times what it was worth under the Japanese. So the Japanese made the value, increased the value of MCA to the point where he became a billionaire instantaneously.
Gotcha.
So that was interesting about how people, because, you know, you think a guy like that, well, how does he become a billionaire?
Yeah.
Versus some other guy who's like producing records. And that's what happened with him. So he had good timing.
There you go.
A lot of it.
So. And he was smart.
Inventing David Geffen.
I thought that movie was that special was a little bit of a suck job on him.
Well, those
that was my problem with it. I thought it was a little too.
I just think his story is fascinating because you know, just the whole way he came up from nothing.
It's worth watching. I just I thought it was a little too congratulatory.
All right. Well, here's what I want to tell you. You can see this if you're looking to watch this on actually the PBS website. You can see it right there on their website. It's I don't know that this is on Netflix or DVD at this point, but
PBS is really kind of weird with their releases. It's hard to find their stuff.
Because a lot of times, like the Pearl Jam one that I liked, I think it was last year, the Woody Allen documentary that I liked that was part of American Masters, those are all on Netflix. This one isn't out yet, but if you go to their website, look for American Masters, and you can watch the whole thing right there.
The American
and
Masters.
And there's actually extras on
American
there.
American Masters series is pretty good.
Yeah. But I believe they're all, I mean, I think they must give them some money, but I don't think they're unified stylistically at all. I think they just kind of let guys do whatever they want.
They just
give
let various directors
an endowment,
do it.
Yeah.
Put it under the banner.
Yeah, so that's, I think
kind
that's
kind of like
seeing.
30 for 30.
Yeah, sort of, yeah.
Although those 30 for 30 seem a little more uniform.
They can be. Yeah. It depends. But anyway, that's where you can watch Inventing David Geffen. All right, Kevin, Corey, give me 11.
11. My 11. Number 11 was a fine film that was actually probably shouldn't count as 2012.
No.
It should count as 2010.
2010?
But it was not released until 2012. Cabin in the Woods.
Cabin in the Woods, okay.
Sat on the shelf for 2 years because of the MGM bankruptcy.
We're going by release date.
But I will say, yeah.
I think that counts.
Well, what's interesting about Cabin in the Woods is that it stars Chris Hemsworth.
Yes.
Who then became a star after it was released.
Right.
Which will occasionally happen is that somebody will have a hit movie and then they'll go, oh, we got all this shit that's in the hopper.
Yeah.
And they'll have to rush out whatever it was that... This was ultimately going to get a release.
This was getting released anyway. I have this on my honorable mention, so I like this as well.
It got tied up in the MGM bankruptcy.
I remember at the time thinking it was overhyped because I think there was a certain part of like the internet nerddom that thought this was going to be like the biggest movie of all time.
Yes.
And it came out and made like $15 million or something.
It appealed exactly to those same nerds.
Right, yeah.
It was horror geeks were shitting themselves
that
this was a spectacular, phenomenal film.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, it's a parody of horror movies, so it is appealing to the same crowd of people that go see horror movies. So you're right, the marketability of it wasn't a big difference.
This is well done. I thought it was a little... Watching it, I thought I kind of saw where it was going a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I thought I was a little bit ahead of the plot sometimes. Whatever. It's not... Horror's not my thing, so I didn't love it as much as some people
did. I think
I
liked it because...
It was very clever, though.
All the cliches in horror get picked apart in this... And I will say no more about the plot if you haven't seen Cabin in the Woods.
Right.
Other than that, there are teenagers and they go to a cabin in the woods and something bad happens.
Right.
And the reason that something bad happens is what makes this movie different. Written by Josh Whedon, who is the king of all nerdery now.
Yeah.
And I enjoy the hell out of it.
It's clever. I mean, I think if you like horror movies, you'll like this. If you don't, you may sort of shrug your shoulders a little bit at. I fear that there's going to be, you know, Cabin in the Woods 8. You know what I mean? Like, they could churn these out year after year because they sort of
have
that.
I don't know. The ending didn't
didn't
leave a lot of room to work with.
Yeah, I know. But, hey, it's horror movies. They always come back. I know that's a cliche, too.
Right.
But they always come back. They'll find a way.
But there's some nice cameos in this. Sigourney Weaver's in here.
Yeah.
And
this was a good movie.
I thought it was very funny and sharply done. And if you're going to do a satire, do a good one. And this was a good satire.
Okay. So, all right. We're into the top 10 now. Let's go back. I have another documentary at 10. And this one I saw on Netflix. So I don't even know who saw this movie in the theater. But it's called Indie Game the Movie. Did you see that?
No, I didn't
see that. This is about it profiles guys who made the following games: Fez, Super Meat Boy, and Braid. And these guys, let's face it, are weird guys. They're odd characters.
Mm-hmm.
And in the case of Super Meat Boy, there's like two guys who made it, and they don't live near each other, and they're talking on the phone the whole time. But they basically, you know, and the guy who made Fez is like a mental patient. And you watch him trying to make this, but it's fair. You know, if you like games, and I'm partial to the subject matter, and so that's a part of why I like this. Plus, I played, I didn't play Super Meat Boy, but Braid and Fez I both bought.
I played Super Meat Boy, and that's a good game. It's hard.
Okay, yeah, that's one reason I didn't get Super Meat Boy, is I've heard how hard it is, and it seems like I'm going to bang my head against the wall. Of course, I banged my head against the wall during Fez.
Did you play Spelunker?
Reasons. I did not.
Spelunky?
No, I did not.
Spelunky is similar to Super Meat Boy, in that eventually you start going, oh, well, screw this.
Right.
What happens is every time you die, the world resets.
Ah, yeah, okay.
It's a different board every time you die. And so once you learn how a pattern goes, you can't go back and do it.
Well, anyway, so Braid, you know, Braid and Fez both annoyed me on some level when I played them, but they were both largely the works of one guy. And it's interesting because, you know, the Fez guy is, like, being sued by his former partner. And you see all the struggles of these guys trying to get these games made and released on Xbox in the case of actually all of these. And, you know, what happens, like, on the day of release, Super Meat Boy's not on the Xbox Live Marketplace. And the guy starts losing his shit in, like, you know, trying to figure out why he's game. It's very dramatic what happens with these because apparently these guys sell so many. And they sell something like 50% of what the game will ever sell is sold on day one. That's the stat they give you in the movie. So these guys become millionaires overnight, essentially. And it's real interesting to see them, you know, to go through that whole process.
There you go.
Yeah. Indie Game, the movie. If you go see that, again, that's also on Netflix Instant Streaming. That's a good documentary. I thought it was a bit long, but they're profiling like three guys equally. So, you know. That's good.
Are you going to do honorable mentions before you get to the 10 or what?
I'm already in the 10.
Okay.
No, we'll just do honorable mentions after since okay. you're doing...
All right.
You didn't see Indie Game, the movie. But
I miss it. So Queen of Versailles was my number 10.
Okay, Queen of Versailles. So why don't we... do you want to go do your number 9 and then I'll do my number 9?
My number 9 is a movie probably no one saw. Very few people saw this, but I thought it was terrific. It's a movie called Starlet.
Starlet, yes.
Which was a micro indie movie.
I did not see that.
That if I described it to you, sounds terrible. But it stars Dree Hemingway, who's the daughter of Mariel Hemingway.
Okay.
And she is a budding porn actress.
Oh.
Who moves?
Now I'm starting to like this.
She moves to the valley. She starts working in the business, and her roommates are a bunch of knuckleheads, and so she's a little smarter than her partying friends.
Yeah.
And a little too smart to be in the business, and she wants to decorate her room. So she goes out to, like, garage sales and stuff, and at one of them, she buys a thermos.
Okay.
Which she thinks would make a lovely vase from an old lady, and it turns out that there's, like, $12,000 in this thermos.
Okay.
She, of course, doesn't return the money, but feels guilty, and then starts a friendship with the old lady that she bought the vase from. And the old lady is a lady they found on the street, really, basically, who was never acted before and will never act again because she's like 85. But I thought it was a really lovely little.
When did this come out?
This came out in like November.
Okay.
So it had a real tiny run. You have to look and search for it. I'm sure you can find it on Netflix.
I have no idea where this is.
But Starlet is there's straight up sex scenes.
Okay, that's
like
always
they're
good.
Shooting porn and sure. They're shooting porn. All right, I mean there's that. Where did that go? Oh, that went right where I thought it went.
Okay.
And so there's straight up hardcore sex in it, which is weird. Not a lot, but just enough to go. Okay, that's cool. But really, I thought it was nice little performances, and it really felt all of that seedy kind of San Fernando Valley, sun-soaked kind of grossness is all in this movie, but it also has heart, and it's a well-done movie. So, out Starlet.
I will have to. I didn't see that either. All right, let's go to number 9. My number 9, which I know you saw, but maybe it's higher up in your list. I'm guessing this might be higher up on your list, but let's take it.
Okay.
I think this is... I guess this is science fiction straight up. I was going to say, I think I have a lot of stuff that's either science fiction or almost science fiction.
Mm-hmm.
But this is basically science fiction all the way. But Looper is my number 9.
That's my number 8.
So all right, good. Well,
we're saving time.
We're
all
tied,
right,
yes.
Good time.
Consolidating the list here. Yeah, we got, we'll make it. We're going to make it. No time worries on this one. Yeah, Looper's real good. I mean, you told me to see this. Mm-hmm. And that's part of why I went out of my way. Because I'd be honest with you, the title... And some of the trailers made me think this thing might be a turd, but no, Looper was real good. It reminded me of, you know, in fact, there was one point I'm watching this, and this sort of reminded me of that series, but I went like, isn't this the exact plot of, like, Terminator 2? There's a point when I was watching this going, I think this is basically the exact same plot as Terminator 2.
It has some overlap with Terminator 2.
But it is its own thing stylistically, and this is where Bruce Willis and Joseph Gordon-Levitt play the same guy, but... 30 years apart, and Joseph Gordon-Levitt has to kill Bruce Willis for reasons that I'll let the movie explain, and it's good, and it does a lot of time travel stuff with paradoxes.
Mm-hmm.
If you like that in your movie, you get that, some good action sequences, and sort of it takes place even it takes place in the near future, which it's always interesting to see what the near future
is.
What is
it, like 2035 or something?
Yeah, it's something like that, but I know that like
it's the near future and then there's people from farther in the future.
Yeah, right, like right. Bruce Willis is 30 years in
40
front.
Years
yeah.
in the future, 30 right. years in the future. So
but I liked also too that in the present in the movie's present day, which is our future, the guys that they want to show driving like old shitty cars are driving cars from today.
Yes.
Which was sort of a little cheat that they made.
Those cars all have like solar panels strapped to them and like weird like modifications yeah. to keep them running.
Yeah.
So apparently gas has run out.
Something like that. So it's a good movie. Looper,
And Looper goes in a weird direction in about halfway point and goes kind of becomes a different movie.
Yeah, it does.
It all worked.
It did. And it sort of feels like two movies kind of.
Yeah.
And it's got a plot twist, which we won't reveal, but all these movies do. Mm-hmm. And good time travel movie.
But you've got Jeff Daniels is in there. And,
yeah, he's the bad guy for a change. Emily Blunt.
Emily Blunt, John Krasinski's prize.
Yeah.
Is in there. So, Looper's terrific. It was number 8 on my list.
Good.
And Rian Johnson, the director, did a great movie called Brick.
Okay.
Also had Joseph Gordon-Levitt, which is really worth checking out.
Okay.
So, which is like a noir set in high school. And I say noir, like noir. A Midwestern jerk-off. But, Rian Johnson, very good young director. Check out Looper.
All right, that's Corey's number 8. So I'll give my number 8, I guess. I guess that's got to work that way. All right, here we go. Gloves are off. Let's start the fist fight. Because staying in the sci-fi genre, my number 8 is Prometheus.
Well,
and Corey, we've talked about Prometheus throughout the year. We talked about it when it came out. Corey, before the mics turned on, said, I was screaming at people about Prometheus just the other day. And I said, well, go ahead. Yeah. Let the screaming begin. But here's my thing with Prometheus. And we talked about it, and probably by now, it's been out on video for a good long while now, too. My feeling is, look, it really is an homage to Alien. It is sort of a retread or a reboot of the Alien franchise, in a sense. To me, this holds up with the Alien movies. Some people, I think, put the first two Alien movies on a pedestal and say these are the greatest things ever made. They're real good movies, but I thought this was too. And you can talk about plot holes all day if you want. But,
oh, I
you
will.
Know, Looper's got them too. They've all these sci-fi movies got them.
You know what the difference is?
So,
Looper has a great scene where Bruce Willis basically bounds the table and goes, look, of course it doesn't make sense. It's time travel.
Yeah.
Which I love that they had the balls to just go, we know that there's holes in our story.
Right.
Prometheus sold itself like it was the next chapter of the Bible. That this was
it sold itself.
Oh, it was hyped.
It was hyped, sure.
It was hypothesized as, okay, you said you're talking about Alien being overhyped.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, Alien is probably one of the 50 greatest movies of all time.
Okay.
Or you could make a case for it being
Alien's a great genre movie. It's but I thought this was a fine genre picture. In the same genre.
I thought it was a steaming piece of shit.
Okay, all right.
I hate Prometheus. It didn't make my worst list because it's too beautiful looking.
Oh, yeah, it was very nice looking.
Sometimes movies are really pretty, and that saves...
Well,
I've never hated a better looking movie that looked like $1 billion. It looked like they put all the money in 3D. It really looked great.
Okay.
The effects, you know what I mean? The planetscape and the smoke coming up and the fog.
Sure.
Look terrific. It's a movie about super intelligent scientists who go to an alien world, immediately take off the helmets of their spacesuits and start walking around looking for trouble. And then when the giant slimy lizard vagina monster crawls out of the muck with fangs clearly visible, the guy goes, no, it wants to be our friend. I couldn't handle it.
All right.
They're so goddamn stupid.
Listen, here's what I'll tell you about Prometheus. I saw this, and this is, you know, this is a weak defense, admittedly, but I saw this in the theater with a paying audience on like a Saturday night or a Saturday afternoon. And, you know, I can judge a comedian when I'm in the room and what the audience think. I thought this movie killed theatrically. Like, in the theater, people were loving this more than maybe any movie I saw all year. This, people were digging this. Yeah. And I'm not saying people aren't dumb and they're not sitting there. Look, I get that.
People laugh at bad movies all the time.
I get that. Well, no one was laughing. I thought people were engrossed and scared by this. And, you know, I haven't seen it since. Maybe if I, on a second look. But, I mean, I don't know. I like Prometheus.
It didn't make my worst list because there are, I will admit, that there is at least one fabulous sequence in it.
Yeah.
The self-surgery machine.
Okay, yeah.
That's terrific.
Sure, yeah.
That doesn't make any logical sense afterwards
right.
that she gets up and walks away and runs out after her stomach got sliced up and stapled together. But, boy, to me, the logical problems in Prometheus are so profound. We did a whole show about this.
We did, and we don't have to revisit
it. And you go back and find that in the archives. And you can hear all of my bitching complaining about Prometheus.
look, a lot of people bitch. I was surprised it was... But I sometimes I feel like maybe this movie... because people found it a little sacrilegious for Ridley Scott to be going back and revisiting Alien, that was what there was some pushback on that.
That
because they felt like he's desecrating his own work.
Yeah, that didn't bother me as much as the internal problems of Prometheus.
Well, all right.
Although the shout outs to aliens were a little famously at the very last shot in Prometheus, end of the movie.
Yeah.
I famously, all the other critics hate me for this.
Sure.
It was stone silence in the room we saw. And it was a good turnout. Like, a lot of people came out for that. It wasn't just the regular six guys that watch all these things. And it was, people were really into the movie. And then at that last shot, I went, wah, wah.
Yeah.
And everybody turned and hated me.
Yeah, but I think people liked it. I mean, I know that there's a certain critic and there's a certain, like, sci-fi fan that won't buy into this, and this was too, I don't know what, the way it was marketed or whatever, or if they overhyped it, and certainly there's guys who on like Ain't It Cool News and stuff have been talking about Prometheus or whatever the Alien prequel has been for a million years, and people were sick of that, and maybe they went in wanting to hate it. I
thought it had no likable characters.
Okay,
that's a problem in a movie.
Yeah,
you'd maybe one.
Sure.
The captain, kind of like.
Oh, okay.
Everybody else, sort of creepy and weird. And Nomi Rapace is very freakish.
Yeah.
Sure. Apparently, she and Charlize Theron flipped roles.
Ah.
That might have been a mistake. Huh. All right.
No, I know.
My distaste for Prometheus.
There's nothing I can say that's going to convince you to like this. But I'm not going to be a pussy and not put it on my list because I know you hate it.
I tell you,
I'll
tell you what, it looks great. It does. I will give it the credit for visually. Listen, it's stunning.
I think. Look, you're not throwing your money away by renting this and watching it for yourself. Mm-hmm. That's all I'll say.
I guess what the problem with Prometheus and maybe all of the all movies do the same. Okay, all movie, and I watch more than most people, so I now am fully aware of the dumb things movies do all the time.
Yeah.
No cop ever squares up, puts both hands on the handle, and takes a shot the proper way.
Sure.
They all run in and shoot wild and one-handed.
Sure. They shoot from the hip.
And they never hit anything, right? Sure. Whereas if they squared up and took aim and took a second, they'd put one in the target. At least that happens all the time in movies. But in Prometheus, it really stood out because the thing looked like $1 billion.
Yeah.
And you had people acting in the same irrational, stupid ways that people act in movies. Well, I understand they're irrational, stupid people.
Right.
But these people were supposed to be scientists.
Yeah,
that drove me crazy.
Sometimes I feel like the world of Alien and whatever
in Alien
world, though, they make them so realistic that when movie conventions come into them, it can ruin that illusion for people.
In James Cameron's Aliens,
These
guys are like Marines, and some of them are kind of young and dumb, and they just want to blow things up. So when the Marines make mistakes, you understand it. But in this movie, these are supposed to be crack experts. All right.
All right.
Moving along.
You need to give
God,
me...
God, I hate Prometheus.
Okay. I knew, looking at my list, there might be one other one that you're going to want to get mad at me about. But okay, give me a number 7, Corey, on your list, and we'll go from there.
My number 7 is a little film, an obscure film.
Okay.
Called The Avengers.
The Avengers.
That was little reported upon or discussed.
Right.
And
nobody saw that.
It's box office prospects.
Well, tell us about the full logic and all the pieces that fit together and that, that there's no logical leaps in The Avengers. Tell me about all that, how that all makes sense.
Here's the difference. The Avengers absolutely has logic holes and plot holes, and it's about a god who hangs out with a steroid-riddled 80-year-old superhero and a giant green man. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
But the issue, and I've had this argument with people over and over again, the Avengers knows exactly what it is and knows exactly what it wants to do.
Okay.
Prometheus was like, we have heavy consequences. we're about the nature of the universe and right. man's quest to understand itself.
Sure.
The Avengers is like, let's put together a fun group of characters and punch stuff. And that's exactly okay. what the Avengers did.
Yeah.
It did it in an entertaining way. It did it in a fun way. It looked great. It all the CG, you know, the money they spent on the CG was well worth it. This is the first time the Hulk looks great in a movie.
Okay.
The Hulk usually looks like a big right. green, you know, blob of shit. The Hulk looks pretty real, and you can feel right. if there was a 9-foot-tall green man that it would look like this. It's a fun movie. All of the years that built into it was all paid off.
Okay.
I am a fanboy. I admit sure. that. So I am giving it a little bit of a status grade. But I would say for a big blood, excuse me, a mega budget, super grossing, one of the greatest grossing movies of all time.
Yes.
If you don't, I don't know about the adjusted gross.
Yeah, I don't know either, like, but know, the sure. And this is in 3D, so that inflates it as well. But
yeah, because you okay. always look at like Gone with the Wind sold.
Yeah.
So many tickets
sure.
at 12 cents a ticket.
Yeah.
But the Avengers, one of the greatest box office hits of all time. For a good reason. It's a fun movie. It's you know what? You want a popcorn movie that's going to entertain you. I think a lot of people saw it who didn't even know about the Avengers were not comic book people and enjoyed it still. So I think it's a fun movie.
Okay.
Not a perfect movie by any means.
I have it, I guess. Is it on my honorable mentions? Yeah, I mean, it's not my worst, yeah. but it's not my best either. But I mean, I'm not a comic book guy, and sure. therefore, you know, I think Chronicles a better movie. But I get where if you're into those Marvel characters,
yeah,
because you've been reading those comic books your whole life, I could see where this movie would be mm-hmm. some sort of, you know, high watermark in actually making a movie feel like a comic
book. It had big
and
laughs.
All of that stuff.
It had big laughs, and the big action piece at the end paid off. It was fun.
Yeah, I mean,
Jeremy Renner is one of my problems with the Avengers.
Yeah.
I think he's boring.
Sure.
But then that's Jeremy okay. Renner. That's he's just deal. Boring.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. If you like the Avengers, you're like, I saw this and thought it was fine. I honestly probably 5 minutes after it ended couldn't tell you what happened in it because, you know, it was just sort of like, you know, fast food for me. They spent $1 billion. Everyone seemed to like it, but, you know, not really my thing. But anyway.
All right.
Avengers was Corey's number 7. Let me give you my number 7. Could this be the complete opposite of Avengers? Could this movie be more diametrically? Maybe this is still on your list. I don't know. But my number 7 is something called Beasts of the Southern Wild.
Wow.
Yeah. That's
We're seeing the softer side of Joel.
Well, what? Okay.
You picked Girls as your number one
I
TV
did,
show.
Yeah, sure.
Now you're looking Beasts of the Southern Wild. Is Les
Beasts
Mis
of the Southern Wild was...
Is Les Mis on this list?
Right. No, here's the thing about Beasts of the Southern Wild. This movie started, and I was afraid. I didn't even know anything about this. I rented this thing, and I didn't know anything about it really when I saw it, other than people liked it. I was afraid this was going to be Tremé. Because it really does sort of start exactly like Tremé, and I was going...
You mean the worst television
show?
Oh,
I know, and you hate Tremé, and I don't even care about Tremé, but I was going, if this is this for an hour and a half or however long this is, it's going to be the biggest piece of shit. One thing about Beasts of the Southern Wild, it's about a father and a daughter in the Louisiana Delta, and I guess Katrina hits, I guess. I don't know if it's considered Katrina or if it's a fictionalized giant storm. That's there to kill all the black people. I'm not sure which one you would call this. But anyway, that's what happens. And but the thing about this movie is it does have a slight supernatural element to it.
Yes.
Which I thought was nice because it stopped it from being that, you know, if this was completely real and trying to feel like a documentary, you'd probably just want to cry. And I'm sure a lot of people bawled their eyes out watching this movie. Because it's like a 6-year-old girl running around trying to not get, you know, killed by raging floodwaters.
Well, did you see The Impossible?
I did not see The Impossible.
All right. Much like the Impossible, Beasts of the Southern Wild would probably be on my honorable mention list.
Okay.
And it is a well-made, it's lovely to look at.
Yeah.
It is absorbing.
Sure.
But I thought narratively it didn't have as much of a pull.
Yeah.
It's a little, you know what I mean? It's just sort of one incident from the next. It's not as compelling a narrative. The Impossible is like that.
Right.
It's them caught in the tsunami.
Yeah, okay.
And the tsunami effects are fantastic.
Yeah.
And Naomi Watts is like in a tank full of brown water for like half the movie. But ultimately, it's kind of a little weak in that regard. But it's a well-made film. Definitely worth checking out.
Beasts of the Wild, I think, is great. And, you know, the other thing is, you know, this kid... I have the little girl is nominated for best actress.
This name, by the way, is the blackest name in the history.
You know what?
Black baby name.
You know what? When you hear it pronounced, I can pronounce it. But
Quinique.
It's Quavon.
Quavonzenel. What is it?
Quavonzenie Wallace.
Yeah, Quavonzenie.
Yeah,
Quavonzenie
Wallace. The little girl, I thought the father was awesome in this. Mm-hmm. And when I guess I read this on Wikipedia or whatever, but I guess they found this guy, like, he was working in a shop or something, this guy that plays the dad. I thought that guy was really creepy and scary because he does, like, yell at his daughter. And, you know, she loves her father, but she lives in fear of him. And I thought that guy was crazy. I thought that guy was, like, an amazing, like, non-actorly mm-hmm. performance. And, I mean, you could get completely depressed by Beast of the Southern Wild. And there are people who will go, I don't understand why the boars were running and all kinds of... There's stuff like that in there that you kind
of
go...
It's a little bit of what they call magical realism.
Sure. It gets to a point where you figure, hey, this movie's working on another level and I may not get it at that level. I get where there's poor folks trying to avoid being drowned. I get that, but you may not get the rest of it. But beautifully shot. This movie was also, I talked about Moonrise Kingdom. This movie was also shot on 16mm, but for some reason it didn't bother me. Although it's a low budget picture, and it's one thing to look at, like, you know, unknowns, you know, in 16mm, and then you look at, like, Bruce Willis and Bill Murray.
Dwight Henry, that's the guy's name.
Yeah, that guy's great, and
I don't
know.
He's already booked another movie for later this year.
I'm sure he booked a bus somewhere too, this guy, because. I'm guessing you'll never see him again.
No,
but,
I'm saying he booked another movie.
Okay, well, good for him. But, I think he might be typecast here. But anyway, Beast of Southern Wild, I think, is worth checking out. It's adventurous. It's a little bit of an adventurous picture. So, you know.
An interesting pick from Joel, and a worthy pick. It's a good film.
It's a laugh. It's a laugh a month movie. You know what I mean? It's pretty sad.
It is.
I think it's cool. So, so anyway, that's my number 7. Corey, you got to give me a number 6.
Here's another lighthearted film about a topic that's easy to explore. No, actually, it is a lighthearted film. Django Unchained.
Django Unchained, okay.
Which is, in a weird way, Quentin Tarantino's funniest movie.
Yeah, I didn't see this.
At least the first half. Okay. And then it gets savage and violent in ways that Quentin likes to do. This is a very provocative movie. It's very provoking. Also, ridiculous fun.
Okay.
In the Tarantino style.
Yeah.
He takes all these cheesy 70s actors, all these heavies from B movies, all these guys, you know. Tom Wopat is in it. Not the heavy, but Tom Wopat from Dukes of Hazzard has a nice little role. And you just look to yourself, you know, Quentin likes to get a reaction out of you. Yeah. Well, you turn to yourself and you go, right after the lead character, when Christoph Waltz shoots a guy. Uh-huh. The marshal that comes to find out what's going on is Tom Wopat. And you get a big, and you just turn and go, I can't believe Bo Duke is in this movie.
Yeah.
Or is he Luke Duke? Excuse
you know
me.
What? That's on you.
He was on, I think he was Luke.
I'm going to let you handle the Dukes of Hazzard heavy lifting.
But anyway, there's lots of people. Ted Neely, the guy who played Jesus in Jesus Christ Superstar, has a bit part. You know, Tom Savini, all these guys are in there. So it's an ode to all the B movies that Quentin Tarantino loves. But I, you know, there's a Jim Croce song in it, for God's sakes.
Okay.
I mean, he's really having fun. He's really playing
with
it.
He's going back to that era. And,
It's a it really looks like those movies from the 70s. A movie called Skin Game with James Garner and, Lou Gossett Jr. that it's reminding me of. Cause you got Christoph Waltz is a bounty hunter who recruits Jamie Foxx off a chain gang because he's looking for specific guys that he wants to cash the bounty on. But they become partners, and they spend several months together learning how to hunt down slave owners. And Christoph Waltz is a German who hates slavery, which is ironic because, you know, in just another less than 100 years,
Germans,
his people
yeah.
would be enslaving everyone. But, he takes the guy who was the Nazi in his last movie and makes him the hero in this one, because that's how Quentin likes to do it. He's perverse. Sam Jackson is great as the houseboy.
Okay,
he's like the inside slave, and he is committed. He is just as committed to the institution of slavery as the white people.
Yeah.
And in fact, even more so, and fights to keep his position. And he's completely, totally evil and worthless. And it's the most. That's probably why Sam Jackson did not get nominated because his character is utterly loathsome.
He's that big of a...
Loathsome and repellent. Just a he's complete... yeah. Selling what? Out his own people. They actually put darkening makeup on Sam Jackson. They actually made him
a lot
look...
of nominations. This is a Best Picture nomination, yeah. As is Beast of the Southern Wild for movies we've talked about.
So Django's great.
And Lincoln.
Great fun. Kerry right. Washington is in it as Django's wife. That's the big thing. They got to go rescue Django's wife, who's on a plantation that's owned by Leo DiCaprio. If I have a complaint with the movie, it is that it is a good 20 minutes more than it needs to be.
Yeah, I...
mostly because the 20 minutes that you could cut are really all about the same thing.
Okay.
Which is that, I don't know if you're aware of this, Joel, but slavery was not cool. Right? I mean...
Well, now that Quentin's telling you that, it's really going to stick.
Leonardo
now.
DiCaprio's character is clearly established as a complete and total...
He's the villain.
Yeah. Awful slime ball.
Sure.
Who likes to have slaves fight for his entertainment to the death in bare-knuckle fights like Michael Vick dogfighting. I mean, you know, and it's just awful and repellent, and they spend a little too much time explaining how terrible Leo's character is. It's nice to see Leo DiCaprio being a straight-up villain.
Yeah.
He doesn't do that all that often.
No,
so,
I can't remember.
If ever, really.
I'm trying to remember.
He plays kind of questionable characters who are on the line, but a straight-up villain.
Right. This was, even in The Party, he was a bad guy, but he was the good guy.
He was the good guy. Yeah, he was the hero, right.
Yeah.
So,
okay.
Django.
I didn't see this.
Well, we're seeing. It's got more N-bombs on a Cat Williams set.
Okay.
But you know what? It's set pre-Civil War when people talk like that.
Sure, sure.
Don Johnson's in it. Oh. He's great.
Yeah.
There's a hilarious scene that I won't spoil, but it's the KKK get together, an early prototype of the KKK, and they're not very successful. So if you like Quentin,
I was a big Quentin fan, and I thought Inglourious Bastards was a dud. I didn't care for that.
Didn't care for Inglourious Bastards.
And I know that I'm in the minority, but I was very bored by that. Oh. And part of me is I looked at, you know, when I went to the theater when Django was out, I always just saw something else because I saw that this was 2 hours and 46 minutes of that. And I went you know what? I'd rather see these other. And I'll get to the list of
Django
the
is
stuff.
Still out.
I saw it in its stead. So
this is a
I'll
rare,
see it eventually.
This is a rare movie that would probably benefit from a shortened cut.
Yeah, yeah.
A lot of times they put out the extended director's cut.
Right.
This could get a shortened edit and a TV edit.
Okay.
That would probably make it better if they cut out 20 minutes of it. But, still great. You can't have more fun than the first half of Django Unchained.
Okay.
In the movies. It's just wild.
I've got one you can.
Crazy.
But we'll get to that. All right. Here's my number six. Remember you said about the softer side of Joel?
Yeah.
You can just get rid of that right now because my number six movie is Ted.
Okay.
Which, listen, I'm going to tell you. Let me tell you about this, Ted.
Let me tell you about this. Googie.
This Seth MacFarlane has never made me laugh once.
Let me tell you something.
Saw Ted.
It's Seth MacFarlane, this little fucking Jew.
Let me tell you
about him. Go. Angelo.
Now listen, saw Ted and you liked it.
Tony,
and,
Angelo, come over here.
Don't be making it out. Don't do some revisionist history on me because you were at the same screening I was for this movie.
Oh, it was okay.
And Ted was, I thought, the funniest. I have another movie above it, I guess, that's a comedy. But for like straight comedies that are going for big laughs, this thing works. And I'm sure Ted 2 will disappoint all of us.
Oh yeah!
But until then, I thought this was very funny, and you know maybe Seth MacFarlane's funnier as a teddy bear than an animated Homer Simpson wannabe. But you know, I unapologetically like Ted, and you know I will tell you why Seth MacFarlane sucks all day long, and still tell you I like Ted. So that should
But see, here's my problem with that.
Yeah.
It's exactly the same shit as everything else he does, except at an R rating.
You know, I don't know if it's the premise. It's because, you know, it is the teddy bear come to life and the effects are great. That heightens the comedy on some level.
Are you just a guy that doesn't like cartoons?
No. I love The Simpsons. Simpsons is like my favorite show ever.
All right.
But I don't know. I find the MacFarlane animation very lazy. I find that the timing is it's a lot of jokes being thrown against the wall that don't work. And maybe because this is a feature, it got rewritten many times and it got honed to a point where every joke worked or it's just people, you know, again, when you can believe that this teddy bear really is alive, it actually makes it funny.
Yeah.
Makes it funnier than it would be if it was just in a cartoon form or something. I don't know. Like I said, I'm still not a Seth MacFarlane fan. But,
My, you know, the
damn
word,
it, I, Ted, you know, worked, the, man. You know the weird thing about, I went, I laughed my ass off. I can't deny it, and it was good. So
you know what the weird thing about Seth MacFarlane is? I will watch a Family Guy from time to time,
yeah,
and enjoy it for what,
yeah,
it is. I hate his other shows.
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
okay.
I get, like, if Cleveland Show comes on, I get itches.
Yeah,
like my my soul leaves my body for a minute.
Right.
Whenever I see the Cleveland Show come on.
Yeah.
And yet Family Guy, it's all the exact same show.
Yeah.
American Dad, Cleveland, Family Guy, the same show all the way down the line.
Right.
Yet one of them works for me and the other two don't. Ted worked okay for me. I will say I laughed, but
okay.
I didn't think it was extraordinary.
Yeah, like I said, I don't know, the effects maybe push it over the limit, maybe the R rating and having, you know, a pot smoking teddy bear. That is very convincing looking and is done well. I don't know. I just like Ted, and I said, damn it, that...
Maybe if the character of the something lovable that acts like a dick, see the movie Paul.
Okay.
Or, you know, which was about an alien that
I
was a pot...
Did see Paul, but...
That was a horny, pot-smoking, yeah, foul-mouthed alien.
Sure.
So very similar to Ted.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe that whole genre has worn on me, but...
Okay.
Well,
there it is.
It was okay.
Give me a five, then.
Give me a five.
Number five.
Give me a bouncy five.
Coming in at number five.
Give me a C.
Halfway home.
Thank you. I'm quoting... I'm referencing a Martin Short character from 30 years ago.
Right.
All
right,
on Saturday Night Live. Number five is, of course, a little film that might do okay in the box office and the Golden Globes and the Oscars. Argo.
Argo.
Number five on my list.
Argo is my number four on my list. So
yeah,
there you go. I liked it.
Very entertaining picture.
Yeah. You can't go wrong with this. Mm-hmm. And it won all the Golden Globes. And, you know, this is a movie that it's not my number one movie. But if you give this the Oscar, no one can say boo. Like, this is a movie you couldn't complain about winning all the...
If Django wins, people will say boo.
Sure. Yeah.
They'll put Jigga in front of it. But
right,
still.
Come on. That's
what?
What are you, an animated teddy bear? You can't talk like that. Listen,
I'm sorry.
No, Argo's fantastic. It tells the true story of the hostage rescue in Iran in 79, mm-hmm, and Ben Affleck directed it and starred in it. And, you know, I mean, it's a gripping story. It's really well made. It's about Hollywood. It's about movie making. And it's good, real good.
That first, like, 20 minutes when they're raiding the...
Oh, the siege. Oh, my God, that was amazing.
It's,
yeah,
tremendous, really,
yeah,
tense. And
oh, yeah,
what's crazy about it is you know what happens to some,
sure,
extent.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe people don't remember
right.
exactly what happened to those
because,
six people. But,
yeah,
because, you know,
the majority of the hostages didn't... They were trapped in the embassy.
Mm-hmm.
And then this is about the other people who weren't,
right,
and who found refuge at the... anyway.
And oddly enough, they never go back to the people that got kidnapped. There were hostages.
Yeah, at the end of the movie, in the coda, they show you what happened.
Right, but they don't really...
During the plot of the film, yeah, you don't see that. But, yeah, this is real good. I mean, this works on a lot of levels. It's true life. It's political, mm-hmm, intrigue. It's about, again, the stuff with the movie making and the... I forget the name of the makeup artist, but that guy was a real guy who really did work for the CIA. The guy that...
John Chambers.
Plays. Yeah, John Chambers. Because he was on an episode of that show, Hollywood Treasure, that I like on Sci-Fi.
Mm-hmm.
They found a CIA, like a spy makeup kit that he put together for them, where guys could put on like fake mustaches in the field and stuff.
Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah, so that's all real. And Alan Arkin is fantastic in this. And
yeah, Alan Arkin's kind of composite character,
yeah,
of a couple people, but
right,
terrific. Arkin got nominated for the Best Supporting,
sure,
Actor.
I think so,
Goodman,
yeah,
could have just as easily.
Yeah, yeah. I think, yeah, it's Arkin for Supporting Actor. And, of course, the movie is nominated. Actually, he's not Affleck is not nominated for directing. So that was...
No,
kind of,
I know.
Odd,
he won the Golden Globe for
an
directing.
An odd slight there, but the guy from Beast of the Southern Wild is, and Spielberg and,
mm-hmm,
and these other guys. So, yeah, Argo's fantastic. You can't go wrong with this.
And unlike most of the other movies on this list... They kept it to a short enough running time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think if I had one little quibble with this would be that, because I was very interested in this, and I read it's this movie, the script is based on a Wired article,
mm-hmm,
a story from Wired magazine, which you can actually get online. So if you want to know the real story about, I would say see the movie first, because,
mm-hmm,
it's probably more interesting to let it unfold that way. But there is a Wired magazine article. A lot of the stuff of the last... How do I say this without ruining it?
There's dramatization in the conclusion.
It's kind of there's a Chuck Norris element to the movie at a certain
Hollywood
point. Where you go
part of the ending.
I go, I can't believe that when I saw it, I said, I can't believe that really happened. And then I looked it up, and it turned out that little bit really didn't happen. But
of course,
still, as
here's
a
movie about how Hollywood makes a story out of it. Makes a mist. Yeah. There's a fake Hollywood story.
Yeah.
And yet, then there's a fake Hollywood story at the end of the movie.
Yeah. But, listen, the true story of Argo is amazing. And
I'd like to thank Clea DuVall for returning to show business.
Clea DuVall, that's
she's been missing.
Yeah, a lot of the guys, what was it?
Tate Donovan,
yeah, another guy. Yeah. They found these actors from, the late 90s, mm-hmm. and they just kind of threw them in there as the hostages.
Those guys are great. You know,
yeah.
Some people complain that the hostages are a little underdeveloped.
Yeah.
But I thought the actors were all good.
Right, yeah.
And they all did what they had to do.
Yeah.
You know how scared these people are, mm-hmm. and how they're fighting. Victor Garber is the Canadian ambassador.
Yeah.
So, well stocked from beginning to end.
Sure.
Tight as a tie hooker. I mean, just...
Yeah, Argo's real good. You can't...
It's 120 minutes.
Yeah, it's a nice... This movie could have been 3 hours.
It's a two-hour movie.
I know.
It doesn't spend the 45 minutes that Django Unchained
When I said I went to the movies and every time I could have seen Django Unchained, I saw something else? One of the other movies that I saw, and I was very glad that I made
2-hour movie. Helps a lot.
There you go. All right, here's my number five. I'm giving out my number five. It's a movie. I must have seen this. This may have been the first movie I saw in 2012. And it made it all the way. And it was probably my number one for a long time. But Jeff Who Lives at Home is my number five movie.
Sure.
Listen. When we get to my worst, I'm going to talk about indie movies.
Yeah.
And I'm going to talk about some of the worst movies I've ever seen. I'm going to talk about an indie movie that's completely incompetent in every single way, technically, acting, every way. And here's the rub. It was directed by the Duplass brothers, who also directed my number five movie, Jeff Who Lives at Home. This is real good. Ed Helms, Jason Segel, they're brothers, and Jeff is the do-nothing pothead brother, Jason Segel,
mm-hmm.
Who lives at home. Susan Sarandon's the mother. And it's sort of a day in the life of them, and they go on this adventure. And I don't want to give a whole lot more of it away because that's what happens in the movie. I didn't know what to expect when I saw this. And this is a really nice, pleasant... not terribly heavy, but yet insightful and funny indie dramedy, comedy. How would you describe this as a comedy?
I suppose dramedy is
dramedy.
That's really what the Duplass brothers do.
Right. But, a lot of this indie stuff is garbage, but sometimes when the indie movies hit with the very, sort of low-key acting and that stuff, it can really move you in ways that some mm-hmm. of these...
This could have gotten cartoonish.
Sure, yeah.
Ed Helms' character gets a little on the border of it.
Absolutely, yeah.
But you know what? It's stocked with good people all the way through.
Absolutely.
Judy Greer, who's underrated. Judy Greer, by the way, is fabulous.
Yeah.
She doesn't get enough credit.
That's one of your top... That's your all-time, right? She's in your all-time.
I mean...
What I'm saying? If you had to all-time pick...
In the Spank Bank?
Yeah, or she's whatever. In your...
I'm saying I wouldn't...
If I could date one girl... It would be true.
I don't think it would be Judy Greer, but she would.
But she'd
would
be up there. She'd be up there.
What they do with Judy Greer in every movie is they go, she's the one who's not hot.
She's the friend. Yeah.
She's the dumpy one.
Yeah, I know.
Meanwhile,
right.
I'd run across traffic to go
Absolutely.
Try and get a shot at Judy Greer.
Right.
Anyway, but she's great. She's in The Descendants. She's great.
Uh-huh,
in that.
Yeah, she was good in that.
So underrated. She's good in this. Radon Chong returns to show business.
Yeah, there
out of
you
nowhere
go. Uh-huh.
To be in this thing.
Yeah, it's a lot
Susan
of...
Susan Sarandon. I liked it a lot. It would probably be on my honorable mentions.
Okay, and by the way, this is on Netflix Instant Streaming as well, so you don't see a lot of... A lot of docs end up on that, but not a lot of sort of dramatic films.
You know, there were a lot of interesting documentaries this year, but really only Queen of Versailles really jumped out at
me. Really? Because I got one coming... My next... Coming up, I got a good one. Anyway, Jeff Who Lives at Home, go see that. Even if you don't like Jason Segel or Ed Helms and think they're dumb, because
mm-hmm.
they do a lot of dumb comedies, let's face it, these guys. Mm-hmm. Or they do, or even like Cedar Rapids was real good with Ed Helms and Jason Segel's,
This might be, this falls right in along with Cedar Rapids.
Yeah.
Win-win.
Sure.
This, if I was making
Little Miss Sunshine,
I
was the indie. Yeah.
I was making Little Miss Sunshine. It was a big hit.
Yeah, okay.
I'm talking about Under the Radar.
Sure, yeah.
Lars and the Real Girl. Uh-huh. If I was putting a list together of Under the Radar indies that are really good,
yeah,
that would definitely put Jeff Who Lives at Home.
Yeah,
You know, so right in that mix, right in that, that mix of.
All right, so that's my five. You got to give me a four.
My number four film is, well, it's Zero Dark Thirty, which some people know and have seen, and you probably disliked. But I think it's a terrific film.
Zero Dark Thirty.
I think it's compelling. It's intense. It asks big questions. Doesn't really give answers, but it does provide a lot of. There's a lot of controversy. There's a lot of torture, and there's an implication that the torture was effective.
Sure.
They kind of try and hedge their bets on that a little bit, but I thought it was and then the raid sequence at the end of the movie.
Yeah.
Is phenomenal. It really goes over the level. It's pretty fascinating to watch. Mm-hmm. Who knows if the procedure is exactly right. I'm sure some SEAL will go, oh, that's bullshit. But I thought it was pretty damn compelling stuff. Great cast all the way through. Again, it's a movie that has an embarrassment of riches to the point where people like Mark Duplass walk in and take he walks in, right. Sips a cup of coffee, and disappears just because there's right. So many actors in this thing.
All right, I'm about to go Prometheus on your ass in 2 seconds. You want to wrap? Keep going if you want anymore.
No, I think it's challenging adult filmmaking. Doesn't reward you with all the answers you're looking for. Yeah. Unlike Argo, which I thought was a little celebratory of the CIA and a little bit of rah-rah, look how great we are. Yeah. Zero Dark.
Same guy. I forget the guy's name. The same guy played the CIA guy. The guy from Super 8, the dad from that.
Oh, right.
Same guy. He played the CIA
Kyle
guy.
Kyle Chandler.
Yeah, Kyle Chandler.
Yeah, he's in both movies. Right. Well, he played, he was in the White House in Argo.
Okay, yeah. All right.
But I hear what you're saying.
Okay, yeah.
He was Hamilton Jordan. He's a real guy. Nerdy. But I think it's a terrific film. I think it's an important film. I think we're seeing it's flash history. Whether or not it's exactly how everything happened, that is going to be debated, and that's going to be the problem with the movie. Okay. But
my problem with the movie is they maybe tried to make this as it happened. I found they took this story of the killing of Osama bin Laden, maybe one of our most compelling stories in certainly modern human history,
mm-hmm.
and made the dullest, driest, boringest fucking film out of it I've ever seen. I've never been – okay, 40 – I think if you took a stopwatch – and you time this movie, which is way too long. This movie is going on 3 hours. Okay, yeah. It might be closer to 2.5. I'm not sure.
No, and in the middle, it does sag a little
bit.
If
you time this with a stopwatch, I would guess 35 to 45% of this movie is shots of Jessica Chastain close-ups of her thinking. And you know what? Jessica Chastain doesn't look like she's thinking about much during this. And I know that she's being lauded as this great actress, and I'm not blaming her because she's certainly been good in other movies. I think this script needed a rewrite. I think they rushed this thing into production. I don't think this movie, Mark Duplass shows up for a goddamn 2 seconds. James Gandolfini shows up for 2 seconds. These guys show up for 2 seconds and just kind of walk in and out of the movie. I found Gandolfini extremely distracting. I didn't feel like they ever really.
Gandolfini was clearly supposed to be Leon Panetta, and he looked.
Him as Panetta in the credits. Director.
Pretty obvious who he's supposed to be.
But. Here's the thing. Alfred Hitchcock said this about drama, about film drama. He said, an explosion is not exciting, but a ticking time bomb under a table is suspenseful. It's exciting. And the movie does this with you where out of nowhere there's a terrorist attack and you don't see it coming. And there is things where they're chasing guys around.
But you know what? You don't see terrorist attacks coming.
That's the whole point of them. I honestly felt like, now listen, I'm also might be biased against it a little bit because I read a book called No Easy Day, which was by this guy, Mark Owen, who was one of the Navy SEALs that actually was part of the raid. And I believe he also consulted on this. And the stuff with the raid was very, very – the book and that are pretty much interchangeable as far as the details. So I think this movie does get it right, but I thought it got it right to this – to the where Argo interpreted things and made things more – here's what I wanted.
You wanted more suspense?
I wanted like an Aaron Sorkin rewrite of this. That's what I wanted. I wanted some dialogue that actually led somewhere. I wanted to watch these people solve clues and figure out who was who and where Bin Laden was. And I didn't feel like the movie ever really made that clear. It didn't connect the dots. I thought it was a collection of scenes. The raid, which in No Easy Day, they talk about how they did this training for the SEALs to go in and get Bin Laden. And they built... I guess
the problem is it's probably more story than they had room for.
Maybe, but...
In that you could have made a whole movie...
They could have, about the SEALs.
Up to the raid.
Right, yeah.
And that would have been a different movie.
But,
and then the raid, you could have made that whole movie.
But when I read this book and I hear about how they built an exact replica of the compound where Bin Laden was hiding in North Carolina out of shipping containers, and they ran these drills, and that's like, I wanted to see that, and that wasn't there. And then I thought even in the raid, I thought they didn't really explain who was who, and that the one guy was Bin Laden's son, and I thought that the movie just sort of, you sort of watch things happen. Rather than nothing was happening, there was no anticipation of anything. One scene came after the next, and eventually Bin Laden was dead. And
I think that the,
I went like,
I think that style,
that's a great story. I love it, but I thought as a movie,
I think
this didn't work for me
that
at all.
Sort of reporting style of the film, the sort of almost quasi documentary style, worked in the movie's favor. It heightened the believability. It wasn't real.
I was bored most of the time.
With the guy and his monkey, they did that little bit that was a little Hollywood.
Right.
But I loved it. I thought it was a terrific film.
I didn't put it in my worst, and I think probably because the raid sequence was really well done. I have it in my most disappointing category, which we'll get to. I have a most disappointing category.
Son of a bitch.
And that's in there.
What's your number four?
Well, my number four was Argo. So do you want me to give my three? All right, I guess I'll give my three. That's
all
what
right,
we'll do. We're on to three. Now, here's what I'll tell you about my top three. No matter what your thought on my last one, these next three, these are the three movies that probably interchangeable for being number one and really knocked me. Like, these were the movies that, like, I thought were a cut above everything else. Mm-hmm. And my number three is a documentary.
Okay.
And it's called The Imposter.
Sure.
Did you see The Imposter?
I did see The Imposter.
How good was this story? Now, I'm going to tell you, here's the thing about The Imposter. They tell you, the title seemingly gives away the movie. It's about a boy disappears in the mid-90s from Texas. The boy shows up in Spain 3 years later, but he's not speaking English, and how did he end up in Spain? And then the movie, in the first 5 minutes, shows you the guy who was the imposter of the kid. And you think that's the whole movie. And what's great about this is the way they made this. Is there's a whole nother mystery that's like, you know, this guy is lying and he's telling you why he impersonated this kid and how he did the whole thing. And you're seeing the kid's family talk about, we were convinced to take this kid in from Spain.
Mm-hmm.
And you're just going, I can't believe any of this. This is so weird and bizarre. And then there's a whole nother layer of mystery that only unravels in the last third that, to me, was amazing. Now, this does work. One thing about this documentary is this is made by the production team who did Man on Wire and...
which is a fine documentary.
Project NIMH, which is another really good documentary, where they reenact a lot of stuff. Probably more than half of this movie is reenactments of the stuff that actually happened. And so in that case, to a strict documentarian, this movie is like, you know, it's reenactments versus, you know, and then interviews with the real people. But man, with the twist in this thing at the end is so crazy. And it's just sort of, it almost worked like, this movie's nothing like it, but it was almost like an exit to the gift shop where you kind of go like, was the whole thing made up? Was this whole thing fake? And you just kind of sit there when it's over and go like, what the fuck, man?
Did you see Tabloid?
I did see Tabloid.
This, I think, unfolded kind of like Tabloid.
Tabloid similar to those.
That the story keeps going and you're just when you think you got it.
Yeah.
You think now it's Tabloid's a very different kind of story.
Yeah, right.
But one you think you
and
got
so it was like Man on Wire, but they
and
work
then it becomes
the
and then
way.
Tabloid becomes about the unreliability of the narrator.
Sure, yeah.
And you start to wonder if anything this woman has told you was true.
Yeah.
And so those kind of documentaries are always good. And The Imposter was very compelling. I probably should have made my list.
This is
another honorable
this
mention.
Just came out on DVD. In fact, it's sitting literally right over there in an FX envelope.
Yeah, I saw it. Not
it
that
just
long
came
ago.
Out and. Really, I thought the best documentary of the year, and I say Project NIMH, which if you saw that was about the chimp who they taught to speak English, and and Man on Wire. If you liked those, I thought this was even better than those, and those movies were awesome. So
I guess I just went with Queen of Versailles because that to me sure. had more punch.
I get what you're saying,
but this is a fine film. Sure,
if you like true crime stories, and that's where sort of Compliance fits into. Mm-hmm. If you like that true life true crime story, The Imposter is just it's batshit crazy insane.
Compliance, you're gonna want to take a shower afterwards.
Yeah, that's the thing.
It's a very grimy
movie. Yeah, this The Imposter is something like you could if you're on a date and you're gonna have dinner after the show. If you see this or you rent it or whatever, like you'll be mm-hmm. talking about this movie because you just go like, what's going on? Like, I'd love to talk to you more about the plot and stuff. It would ruin it for anyone who's listening to this that hasn't seen it yet. So The Imposter, again, this could have been number one on my list, but I liked all of my top three so much. So.
Yeah. No, and like Tabloid, which is a really entertaining doc.
Yeah.
A lot of people go, documentary, it'll be boring, and I'm not going to like it, and when did the Jason Statham come and shoot something?
Right.
But, you know, documentaries are just as valid of a form of storytelling.
I want to say I jumped out of my chair, which I didn't, and I did in a sense, you know, when this final, the stuff started unraveling at the end of The Imposter. Mm-hmm. Wow, that was cool. All right, give me a number three, Corey.
Give me a three. My number three. Now, take in mind that I do write these lists as a film critic.
Sure.
I'm using my official list
that was
published. As a film critic, sometimes feel it's my job to expose people to films they would otherwise never see.
Okay.
So maybe something like Lincoln gets bumped down off the list.
Okay.
Because it's kind of obvious. It's a movie that not a soul anywhere saw that is a Norwegian film.
Oh.
That's called Turn Me On, Damn It.
Turn Me On, Damn It.
And it is.
I've heard of this.
Actually fantastic. It's a terrific movie. One of my favorite movies all year.
I want to say that's on my Netflix queue. It may very well be.
I got to say, folks, right now, it's the finest Norwegian teen sex dramedy you'll ever see.
Yeah, that's why. Maybe.
Yeah.
I know exactly what this movie is now that you're bringing up, but I haven't seen it yet.
It's about a young girl I'm not going to bother naming the actors because you don't know any of them. Yeah. They're all Norwegian. Yeah. But it's about a girl in a little Norwegian town that's kind of, you know, on the out somewhere in between Oslo and anywhere else of interest. And she starts having feelings, starts having her awakening and starts getting feelings for a boy. And then the popular girl, and in a weird twist, the popular girl is the chubbier one.
Oh, okay.
In America, the lead girl would be Norway. The hot one.
They like them
thick
in
Norway.
But in
Norway, it's cold. You need a little extra pudding. Right. And in Norway, the chubbier girl is kind of the mean, pretty bitch.
Okay.
And she starts to sort of ruin the lead character's life with gossip and scandal and innuendo. And it's really, she starts calling a sex line and rubbing one out on the floor.
Wow.
And it's really, it's a really fun, but a very, you could relate to it. It will remind you of all the awkwardness of your teen year. It's like a highly concentrated, like Freaks and Geeks episode. It's like all of the awkward uncomfortableness of your teen years and what that was like to try and build an identity. But it's from Norway. It's graphic, in the dialogue and in the discussion and then what they, you know, and, it's funny, really brilliantly well acted, a total surprise. That's a movie you go into. I went into it knowing nothing, came out delighted. This is a great movie. Check it out. Turn Me On.
Okay. Turn Me On. Yeah. I think that is out on DVD now if you want to see that. All right. To my number two. And again, my top three are so different that, you know, again, this could have been number one. And again, this was a 2011 movie that only got released in America in 2012, but, The Raid Redemption.
Oh,
did you see The Raid Redemption?
Sure, The Raid Redemption.
Jesus fucking Christ, this movie.
Yeah, sure.
I was 40 minutes into this and went like, I think this is the best action movie I've ever seen, and it wasn't even half over yet. This movie's insane. This takes place in Indonesia, and it was actually directed by a Welshman, which you can watch the extras on the DVD to figure out how he ended up making this Indonesian, this movie excels in both guns and karate. Which sometimes movies go in one direction.
That's very true.
John Woo always did the guns, not so much the karate. This movie does both, and it's about a rookie policeman and his team that have to basically take over a building that is run by, I guess the guy's a drug dealer? I guess that's what the guy is. He's producing drugs in this flop house, this multi-story building in Jakarta, And these policemen run in, and of course, not everything is as it seems because there could be a fink among the police. There could be a good guy amongst the bad guys.
Right.
But they must shoot 2 million rounds of ammunition and the machete sequences, and just you've never seen action like this. And I'm talking like the action in this is just insane. I mean, and it's not just how many bullets they shoot; it's the way it's shot. And you see guys, the way these guys like fall off of balconies and like break their backs on the railings. And there's just stuff in here you've never seen in an action movie. Just one sequence after the thing with the refrigerator and the fuel, and just one sequence after another.
It's good.
Mind-blowing. So the Raid Redemption.
It does remind me a little bit of like John Woo and his
it is that,
but Hong Kong era, like hard-boiled.
Sure, yeah, it is sort of like hard-boiled, but it's like that on steroids.
There's a great Korean movie that I'm a big champion of from about 2000 called Nowhere to Hide.
Okay.
That reminded me of this in that it was gunplay and
right.
fist fighting.
Right.
When the bullets
they run out of bullets.
They go, I'm going to just beat your ass.
And then they just send
and
out.
And the fight scenes in Nowhere to Hide are insane like this, where they're just really bone breaking.
And I think they use CGI for some of like the stabbing and stuff, which is really nice because it's stuff you couldn't have done, you know, how many years ago, whatever, you know what I mean? Like we're, things are getting embedded in people's flesh, and they continue to fight. And it's just that you've never seen. Now, listen, this is not really a girlfriend material. I don't know if this is a date movie, but if you want to see something that's just wild, over the top, crazy action, I mean, it's got a story to it too. There's a story there. It's not, you know, it's not the deepest story.
It kind of reminds me of John Carpenter's Assault on Precinct 13.
Yeah. It's got that
that element where they're under siege.
Yeah, it's got
it's
got classic movie elements. You know, Rio Bravo is really the beginning of all that. You know, if you want to go back to that, and you could say, you know, who's are the cops turning on each other? Is the bad guy? Is there a mole? You know, that's got all that stuff too. Like The Departed or Reservoir Dogs or something like that. So it's got that level of intrigue too. But I'm telling you, the action stuff in here is like unforgettable. It's amazing. And The Raid Redemption. Go see that. That's crazy.
Good stuff.
That's a wild movie.
Weird, wacky stuff.
Ed, I'm telling you. All right. Number two from Joel. Number two from Corey is...
Oh, we're all the way up to number two.
Yeah.
My number two, this could be controversial as well. Oh, I don't know. You're probably not going to be happy with me.
No.
Number two is...
Don't say it.
Paul Thomas Anderson's The Master.
I didn't see The Master.
Okay. All right, good. All right.
I was just playing along. Tell us about The Master. I've not yet seen The Master.
Well, you know, if you're on... It's a P.T. Anderson joint. If you're down with P.T.A., then you know me. You know, I think he's the best American director working right now.
Okay.
Whose name isn't Martin Scorsese.
Yeah.
So, and Scorsese can, believe me, he can slip from time to time. But Paul Thomas Anderson has done nothing but good stuff.
Yeah.
Going back to Hard Eight and Boogie Nights and Magnolia and all everything, it's been all gems. This is a fabulous movie, much like There Will Be Blood. It's a very intense, kind of unrelenting story. Joaquin Phoenix is a Navy vet from World War II who's a little bit haywire. He's a little shell shocked and never really recovers. And he's kind of a drifter, and he runs around making like his claim to fame is he makes these drinks.
Yeah,
he makes these crazy cocktails, but he's using like paint thinner and turpentine and shit, and like mixing them with like rum and coke, and like he makes these crazy, super insane, messed up drinks. And he sneaks onto the yacht of Philip Seymour Hoffman, who's playing he's not playing L. Ron Hubbard, but he's playing L. Ron Hubbard.
Right.
And L. Ron Hubbard character is such an incredible drunk, they immediately bond over this, like, their insane rot gut booze that they share. And it turns into a bizarre, kind of complicated friendship, brotherhood, semi-homoerotic, at least on one end of it, kind of relationship. It's very intense. It's really about the rot of the American dream. It's kind of about, you know, the forgotten corners of the Greatest Generation. I'm stumbling on this show. I don't know.
I wish I could help you. I didn't see it.
You did not see The Master. The performance by Joaquin Phoenix is sensational.
Okay.
It's really...
He got his
A lot of
back.
People said... It's, I know, after he did...
That might have hurt this movie, because this movie kind of...
Right.
It came out and was a critical darling, and then it kind of disappeared, and then the Oscars, I think they expected it would get do better than it did at the nominations.
You know,
it
for whatever
some.
Reason, it never built the buzz
that's
you
what
had
I mean.
Thought... It had a huge buzz in Toronto.
Maybe because he's not there.
Well, yeah, I'm not there, yeah.
I'm not there. He wasn't there.
It's,
so I'm going to see this when I can. But again, it sort of disappeared from theaters, and I don't even know if I wanted to see this now if I could. Maybe one theater in Detroit.
No, it'll probably come out on Blu-ray.
It's coming out soon.
Enough,
it's coming out, I think, next month. So, yeah. No, I take your word. This is something I want to see, so.
It's fabulous. You know, again, it might be a little too long.
Sure. And how many teddy bears smoking pot are in this?
There are no.
Oh, well, how could this possibly be?
I will tell you that Amy Adams deserves her. Wow, does she deserve her her nomination?
Okay.
She is scary in this movie.
Yeah.
Amy Adams is something I've never seen before. She frightens me.
All right.
Amy Adams is always known for playing sweetness and light and kind of. Yeah. Innocent characters are kind of, or sometimes a tough girl, like in The Fighter.
Yeah.
But this one, she just knocks it out of the park. There is a, let me tell you, it's the scariest hand job that's ever been displayed on film.
Well, that's, I guess some of mine weren't on film. But
no,
anyway.
No. It's, yeah, I know. It's The Master is great. It's a great American movie. It's about America. It's about a lot of things. About it's America. About Philip Seymour.
About America.
It's about America.
It's just like
we're going to do it for Uncle Sam.
All right.
It's the best movie I've ever seen in which a man builds a sand woman on the beach, complete with a vagina, and then humps it.
Wow.
No, it's a great movie. Okay. It's really intense, really weird, really freaky, hard to shake off, hard to get out of your soul. And probably many people will hate it and will tell me, Corey, you're
yeah, I've heard that
jerk.
From a few people, but I'm going to see this. I take your word for it. So anyway, Master, number
not
two.
Another not short, by the way.
Nah, another
another ginormous picture. That just Fantastic. Goes on for.
You wonder if the switch to digital has made people just shoot 3-hour movies now. You know, if maybe like that cost of film stock was counter, you know, counter to making.
Hold on, is that movie not showing up in his man? I'm not there or whatever.
He's not showing up. Where?
I'm still here.
Was that it?
Oh, it does. It is.
I'm
here.
Not there. I'm still here.
He's listed as a writer, but it doesn't show up in his filmography as an
because
actor.
He's not. It's considered a documentary. Yeah, dummy. It's
not a documentary.
Yeah, that was a bomb.
I'm still here. I'm not there. Which was the Bob Dylan.
I'm not there. Was the Dylan. you know, Letterman did that interview with Oprah. I don't know if you ever saw. Mm-hmm. It was on Oprah's show recently, and he talked about how you know they let him in on it beforehand.
Oh, they let
when,
Letterman
with Letterman's famous interview with Joaquin.
Uh huh.
He said he brought him in there, and they said him and the Affleck brother Casey.
Mm-hmm.
I think he called him. What did he call him? I think he called him Jerry Van Affleck, which was you know reference to Jerry Van Dyke. What Letterman called
Letterman
Casey
was
Affleck.
Fabulous in that.
Yeah, he was great.
Joaquin, I wish you could have been here.
Yeah,
tonight.
I wish you could have been here. And they played that clip on the Oprah interview, so that was great. All right, my number one movie of the year, showing Corey completely missed the boat. Literally the boat in the case of this movie. My number one movie, The Softer Side of Joe.
Battleship? Kimmy Battleship.
No, I refuse. My number one movie was a little picture called The Life of Pi.
Oh.
Which I thought was awesome. And, God, how do you describe this? I mean, you've probably seen the trailer. There's an Indian kid on a boat with a tiger. But what leads up to that is great. And what leads
that's about it. That's all you need to know.
No, you know what? It's funny. If you go into it and that's all you know about it, you'll probably enjoy it more than me ruining it. Because, again, this is a movie that has layers and what is the truth and what is imaginary. And one of the nice things that I guess the book does this, too, because people love that book. And I guess a bunch of guys tried to make this over the years. A bunch of like famous like directors had this, and they had the rights, and they passed
very,
on it.
It's very allegorical, so it doesn't seem like a movie you could make.
Right, but one of the nice devices was this, you know, it's a reporter interviewing Pi, that's the guy's name, as an adult, and he's telling him this story about what happened when he was a kid. And the guy that's the actor, the adult Indian actor guy, I thought was awesome. I thought he was really believable. And apparently they shot this with Jake Gyllenhaal as the reporter. And then they went back and they decided that it took you out of the movie to have a famous guy there. So they shot it with an unknown as
they
the reporter.
They shot it with a...
They reshot it with some Canadian actor. And
so Jake Gyllenhaal was the...
He got aced out.
Hold on. I know
Life
that guy. Because that guy was in One Day...
The Canadian
with
guy?
Anne Hathaway.
Oh, okay. Well, that's fine. But
I
still, he's...
It's funny. I did say... His name's like Jamie...
He's an unknown to most people. And but this Life of Pi, and it was in 3D... And I don't know, I think, I don't know if Hugo was my number one last year, but for another reason, 3D, this was
good use of 3D.
Fantastic 3D. Yeah. The CGI in this, you couldn't really have made, I see why you couldn't have made this, because there's CGI in this stuff that has to be absolutely believable, and you can't even for a minute think that it's not CGI.
Well, also you've got a tiger.
Or it will take you out of it. Well, that's the thing, yeah. If you think this is fake at any time, if you're looking at it and you're going, well, this isn't real, it just ruins the drama in this. And, you know, this is, I think, an all-time classic movie. I think this is a movie that you can show your kids. It's a little, maybe a little intense for little kids, but, like, for teenagers and stuff, this is almost like a, it's almost like a Huck Finn or something, but, like, in a, you know, completely different, but in the story of a young man's adventures.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, Ang Lee, who's made a lot of good movies and a couple bad ones, is a director. And the CGI is awesome. If you can see it in 3D, I think they've re-released this now because it got most of the Oscar noms. I think Lincoln got one more than this. So Life of Pi,
well,
if you get a chance to see it in the theater in 3D, go see it. Because I think it adds something to it, and most people don't have 3D TV.
It's
so we'll
allegorical.
Yes, it is.
And for me, that's where it kind of falls apart. So,
all right.
I enjoyed Life of Pi. It didn't quite make my list. I thought it was beautiful to look at.
Yeah.
To me, not being a religious person, the allegory at the end kind of didn't move me in the way it moved some people.
Okay.
But I did find it interesting and compelling and good to look at. It just didn't quite make my list.
All right, Life of Pi. That's my number one movie of the year. There it is.
By the way, Rafe Spall, who played the writer.
Rafe Spall.
Was also in Prometheus.
Oh, I see. I didn't, again.
As the idiot that sticks his hand into the monster's.
Well, I don't remember
him. He's the guy
that
goes, she's so beautiful.
Yeah, I know the guy.
And then the monster eats his fucking face.
Well, all right.
Because he's a stoop.
All right. Well, he was terrific. All right,
we got to get to the worst.
No, we got to get your number one.
My number one is Silver Linings Playbook.
Silver Linings
There you go.
Playbook.
Okay, thanks.
And Corey, I don't know if you've talked about this on the show.
I've talked about it at length and raved about it and. Blah, blah, and I spanked
and again,
it into a bucket.
This is another movie, not unlike The Master, where if you wanted to see this, you had to go to a theater and know the secret knock somewhere. Because they just now released this wide. Literally,
it's now getting wide.
In, like, last Friday, it went wide and was, like, the number three movie.
They stupidly pulled back on the release pattern because it's Weinstein, and they do whatever they want.
Well, they wait for the noms to come out and before they release it.
Right.
Zero Dark Thirty, I rushed out to the theater to see when because they held that back for... however many weeks when it was getting all the buzz back around Christmas. So anyway.
Sure.
But go ahead. Give us a little more.
No, I love Silver Linings. David O. Russell has moved to the next level. It's really, it's simple. It's not, doesn't have monsters, doesn't have slavery, doesn't have, you know, epic storylines, doesn't have a raid to kill Bin Laden. It's all it's got is a crazy guy and a crazy girl, and they're completely whacked out families. And I thought it was a great story, a tremendous movie. This is really a movie about the performances.
Right. All the actors were nominated. For
the actors are all great.
De Niro and
De Niro
Jennifer
is
Lawrence.
Fabulous. He checks into the movie after being drifting along in poop jokes for the last decade doing Fokker movies. He finally has something he can sink his teeth into.
I like that movie where he went and found his kids. That made me cry.
Jennifer Lawrence was not great on Saturday Night Live, but she's great in this movie.
I didn't see her on SNL, but...
She's fabulous in this movie. Really tears the movie apart with her great performance.
And this movie is a comedy or a drama or a little bit of both?
It's a little of both. It probably leans a little more towards comedy.
Okay.
But what it is, it's really just a romantic comedy perfected. It doesn't have any of the dumb shit that all the other romantic comedies has. It's smart. It plays out like in a semi-believable, although completely absurd relationship. It's a great movie. It's a fun movie.
All right.
It's a movie that'll make you feel good. Unlike so many other films on this list, it will give you. You know what I mean? You'll enjoy yourself and will be elevated. Maybe it's not as substantial as something else. Maybe it's not. Maybe it's not as lasting. But it's a damned entertaining picture.
All right, Silver Linings. Again, I haven't seen that, but again, I you know. I wasn't invited to a screening of it either. Well, and literally a lot, most people haven't seen it because it never, but hopefully it'll find a life now.
They screened that on a Monday night at the Main and nobody was there.
Yeah.
And I remember yelling at the reps going, you guys cram every individual butt you can into this piece of shit every week. These pieces of crap.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
And this is the best movie of the year. And we got a half empty theater on a Monday night. It was like,
and
it was raining.
I wonder if the title has hurt that a little bit because you kind of, it's hard to see what I don't even know what that means. Like, I mean, maybe it's explained, maybe it's not.
But. It's his, it's Bradley Cooper's he's got a plan to correct his life.
Okay. Right.
After he's crazy, he he gets out of the, he goes to the loony bin because he finds his wife in the shower with a coworker.
Yeah.
And pummels the guy and goes to the loony bin. Chris Tucker is in this.
Oh, my goodness.
Chris Tucker, welcome back to
Never
Showbiz.
Touch a Black Man's Radio.
All right, so there you go. That's the good movies. Let's move into the good part of the show. Let's just speed through these.
Let me do some disappointing, if you don't mind, because these are also movies that... I mean, Dark Knight Rises was a huge disappointment, and I know you hated it, so... and we've talked about that at length.
That's on my worst.
The Hobbit, I mean, no one... The only problem is that no one really thought that was going to be good. If you do see the 60-frame 3D, the 60-frame-per-second 3D of The Hobbit was awesome. Yeah. But, boy, that was a big disappointment. I talked about Sleepwalk with Me being disappointing, Zero Dark Thirty. A movie called Ruby Sparks came out, and this was the people who made Little Miss Sunshine.
You didn't like Ruby Sparks?
And I thought it was disappointing. Maybe it's because the bar is set high with Little Miss Sunshine. It's disappointing. It's not the worst movie, but...
I really liked
Ruby Sparks. I kind of, go, eh.
I like that Zoe Kazan and Paul Dano.
Eh.
I liked it.
I wanted to like it. I went to see it because I thought I'd like it. And it was...
The second guy in that, the Baxter in that, is in everything.
Yeah, that guy's in every movie.
He was in the Safety Not Guaranteed.
And Safety Not Guaranteed, which is in my honorable mentions. Any honorable mentions quickly before
we've really covered my honorable mentions.
I don't know. Safety Not Guaranteed. The Gray was good. That came out this year. The Crossfire Hurricane, the Stones documentary was very good.
Yeah, that was like a TV doc. I'm not really counting that. Yeah.
If you like LCD Sound System, Shut Up and Play the Hits was interesting.
That was fun.
But if you don't like them, I don't know that you'd get it. I don't know what else.
Chris Messina.
The 5-Year Engagement is terrific for 10 seconds because I'm in it.
Joel is in 10 seconds of the 5-Year Engagement. 5-Year Engagement's perfectly okay.
It's
although
fine, yeah.
They paint Ann Arbor like a Rube right. Hilljack town where you can't find good restaurants.
That was a mistake.
So I went, are you shitting me?
Seeking a Friend for the End of the World was okay. I don't know. 21 Jump Street was a funny comedy, as I thought was The Candidate. Campaign. Let's say campaign. The Campaign.
Yeah, Campaign was a little underwhelming for me.
I liked both of those as far as your mainstream comedies.
21 Jump Street had big laughs in it.
Yeah, 21 Jump
it
Street.
It was dumb, but it
and
had
the 3D version of Titanic I went to the theater and saw. And that
you
was,
oh
I had
God.
A dating a girl. All right, let's get into the worst.
Where's my button? I need
the
button.
Worst. Quick, I know you want to go.
Homo! All right.
The worst. I mean, we could do 2 hours on the worst, I'm sure. But.
I'm sure. Might as well do a separate show.
Well, let's quickly give people, and because there's one here that I may need an hour to discuss how awful it was.
I don't have time.
But nobody saw it. All right, well, I'll give some worst. John Magaro starred in both Not Fade Away and Liberal Arts.
Oh.
I'm not sure which was worst, but both
of those movies.
And Liberal Arts, by the way, if you want to watch a movie, like most of these worst, I would say don't bother with. If you see Liberal Arts, it's a good movie to goof on. The guy from you can actually goof on that because the plot in there you want to take this guy and smack him upside his head.
Okay.
So if you see either of those, here's the awful found footage movie I was talking about. Project X was completely humorless. We're going to throw the world's biggest party, and it's going to be no fun for the people watching. Project X was just
I actually did not see Project X.
It was just. You just see this, and you expect it to be like The Hangover or Superbad or something, and it was just like it was this weird sort of MTV-ish, like it was just no good. It just was creepy. I didn't like it. All right, go ahead, give me some worse ones.
Fun Size.
Jeez,
that was bad. I'm trying to get to 15 here. Battleship.
Yeah, everyone notorious.
Not so much with the Battleship.
Yeah.
Just one of two. Now, and if you recall, Assholes of the Year, Taylor Kitsch.
John Carter,
made Assholes of the Year because he was in that and he was in John Carter. Just okay. Horrible.
Men in Black 3 was awful. Hunger Games was... Listen, I know people love the Hunger Games. I don't know who... I didn't read the book, but if just solely judged on the movie, the Hunger Games can suck my dick. That was awful.
Okay.
Though I just didn't buy into the whole world. This was only out on video on demand, I think in DVD, but The Bachelorette with Kirsten Dunst and a bunch of other broads, you know.
That was bad.
This was like the female Hangover, and you know, yeah. Unlike Bridesmaids, which ended up being better than like what people thought it was going to be, the Hangover was just dreadful. So don't bother with that.
Okay, that's not. Yeah. Joyful Noise with Dolly Parton, Queen Latifah.
Good God.
Why don't you just?
You know, that was completely erased from my memory. Well, until just now. And I hate you for bringing it up.
It can't be erased from my memory.
Because
I saw the son of a bitch.
All right. How about Tim and Eric's $1 billion movie?
Absolutely.
I'm asterisking going. I only saw 15 minutes of this because my girlfriend was watching this, and I literally walked out of the room.
I saw every goddamn second of it.
Yeah,
these no talent Tim and Eric, and they get guys who are legitimately funny, like John C. Reilly.
There's a lot of cameos in this, and that's kind of why I thought, how could this be bad with all these cameos? And literally, this thing is unwatchable. And I didn't like those Tim and Eric show. But for some reason, I thought I might like the movie. Mm-hmm. What the hell was I thinking?
They have a style that's called anti-comedy.
Well,
and it's basically...
Never been more true than...
Basically anti-human.
Yeah.
I mean, hate everything about it.
I want to single out... Remember when I said there's a movie, the Duplass Brothers made a movie that is tech... This movie shouldn't be in a college film festival. The Dodeca Pentathlon, they drug out of like... They shot this in like 2008, and after they made Cyrus... Mm-hmm. And Jeffrey Lives at Home, they decide somebody gave him money to release it. But there's nobody in this. The premise is two brothers have like a decathlon type thing to see who's the better brother. And that's a funny premise. Of course, that's about 6 minutes of the film, and the rest of it is the guy's wives yelling at him. And it's technically unwatchable. It's just not edited. It just doesn't look like a feature film. It's garbage, garbage, garbage. So skip the... I know the premise is good. You like the Duplass Brothers. You want to see something. Skip the Dodeca Pentathlon.
Okay.
It's incompetently made. I don't have time. Okay. I'm going to save this. I'm going to save Take This Waltz for another show.
Okay.
Can we? Because that's...
But you already went off on it.
No, I went off to you on the phone.
Oh.
No. This movie deserves... Okay. Take This Waltz is on Netflix Instant Streaming. Some people... Michelle Williams... And what's the other? Who's the guy in that?
Seth Rogen.
Yeah. You're going to see this on Netflix. It's going to have good reviews. You're going to say,
I forget
this.
Sometimes, folks, that it's not for the podcast. It's just for the phone.
It was. You and
Joel did a whole podcast
I
on
cut
the phone
a promo on Take This Waltz.
Yeah.
That was unbelievable. But it's not my worst movie of the year, and here's why. Do you have an actual worst movie of the year?
I do. You know, a couple other shitty movies.
Taken
2.
Oh, God, I didn't see that, but yeah, I heard it was
They took everything that was
fun. I love Taken, yeah.
They took everything that was fun and Taken. They went, let's do it all again, but dumber.
Oh, my God.
Let's just do it a little dumber.
Yeah.
There's a scene where Liam Neeson and his daughter, who's now in on the act, because this guy is a security expert, a former Special Forces, SAS, Army Ranger. I don't know how you can be in both, the British and American. But anyway, super badass.
He's a Jedi, too.
He gets his... Right. Who gets killed. He's the worst Jedi. He gets his wife kidnapped this time.
Oh, well,
before his daughter got kidnapped.
I'd start looking into him.
Yeah, I know. Then immediately his wife gets kidnapped. They're like, hey, come to Turkey. I got a gig in Turkey.
So the daughter goes and rescues the mom with
him? So then the daughter has to help him rescue the mom. And they do a scene where they're getting chased by terrorists. So they crash through the gates of the American embassy in Turkey.
Oh.
They're, one, not immediately shot to death by the guards.
Yeah.
Two... They get out of there. Then they move to the next scene. They're not detained by, the military. All right. Okay. Terrible. So stupid. Total Recall, pointless.
Yeah, I don't know why they remade that. Whoever that director is, they should take him outside. That's enough bad movies.
Len Weissman.
The guy who makes Underworld. Shoot him. Shoot him, for real.
Yeah.
Put him in a building and send the Raid Redemption after
Do you
want my worst? Well, my worst, most, and really, Take This Waltz is going to get its own show because that was so bad. And I have so many problems with that. It's not enough to just say it was awful. This movie, I think people know, was awful when they saw it. I never talked about it on the show because I saw this at a press screening the night before I went to the Gathering of the Juggalos. Uh-huh. But the most cringeworthy movie I think I've ever seen is something called Hope Springs with Meryl Streep and Tommy Lee Jones. And poor Steve Carell is there contractually obligated to sit there and be part of this piece of garbage. Watching old it's bad enough to watch old people fuck. And then we have to watch people who can't fuck because they don't love each other anymore and watch them try to rekindle. And it's just like the characters aren't having fun. Nobody's having fun. Yeah. What the fuck were they thinking? You can't sit through this movie. This is God. Listen, Dodecapentathlon is technically completely inept, but this movie is well made and you're just going, who's watching this garbage? Maybe if I was a 70-year-old lady with a dried up coochie and
I saw a film that was similar. That was my number 10 worst movie of the year. That was very similar to this.
Well, I like you ranked your worst.
I did.
Well, I only ranked my top, but
My 10th worst movie of the year was called Darling Companion.
Yeah, what was that?
And that featured, it was, first of all, directed by Lawrence Kasdan.
Oh, wow.
A writer and director with a track record.
Yeah.
And it featured Kevin Klein and Diane Keaton. And they're a married couple, and their daughter, Elizabeth Moss, is their daughter, and she's getting married, leaving the home.
Yeah.
And they adopt a dog.
Okay.
And then they go up to Vail to, go ski and stay in a cabin up in the woods in the mountains.
Okay.
And then the dog gets lost. Are you bored yet,
I'm
Joel?
I'm bored, yeah. And then
they spend 50 minutes looking for a dog in the woods.
God, that's bad.
Because she can only love the dog and not him.
Right.
It is the drippiest, just baby boomer, navel-gazing, bullshit. I can't wait for all the baby boomer directors to die.
Yeah.
So I don't have to hear about how great the 60s were.
Right, yeah.
Which is exactly what Not Fade Away was about.
And Not Fade Away, yeah.
Number 9, This Means War.
Okay.
This Means War.
Was that with Heigl or
no,
or,
no, no, Reese Witherspoon.
Gerard Butler, though.
Huh? No,
Gerard
no,
Butler?
Not
this
Gerard
wasn't Gerard Butler.
No.
My mind is. Go ahead.
No, but Chelsea Handler.
Chelsea Handler,
who was also the star of Fun Size.
Who was the guy in this? Chris Pine.
Chris Pine.
Okay, I know the one.
And
those movies get so interchangeable to me. Yeah.
And Thomas Hardy.
Okay.
Who they're trying to make a big action star, but he's a big fruit.
Yeah.
So that's not working out. And he's got lips that look like he got stung with a bee. That was dreadful.
Okay.
Chelsea Handler, can you stop putting her in movies?
Yeah,
please?
I think they will. I think request is
number 8
granted.
Trouble with the Curve.
Yeah, I didn't see that either.
Yeah, I had trouble staying awake.
You're
Clint Eastwood. Now Amy Adams is in this.
Yeah.
And unlike in The Master, she's very bangable.
Yeah.
She's very appealing,
right. But
you feel bad for her that she's stuck in a movie about how Clint Eastwood can't die yet.
I think that, I think Hollywood's turned on him too. He's been making
movies for about 20 years about how he's too old to do anything, and he keeps making them. Sometimes he'll make a great movie.
Right.
Sands of Iwo Jima, Flags of Our Fathers, those are great. But boy, when Clint is in his little mopey, woe is me. I'm Clint Eastwood. And
well, people like that. People like that movie they shot here. What was that one?
Oh yeah, Gran Torino.
Gran Torino.
You get off my lawn. You kids don't know anything. You got to use your sabermetrics for baseball.
Yeah.
Fuck your money ball. I know. I can see a guy in the eye. All right, it's just terrible. I hate that. That it was. What else you got over there?
Oh, I missed Act of Valor. This is like the Army movie or the Special Forces movie where they said, we'll get real Special Forces guys and get rid of the actors.
Yeah.
And, of course, when the Special Forces guys have to act, they can't act.
Mm-hmm.
So, to me, I'd rather get actors and train them how to do shooting than get guys who know how to shoot and can't act. And, I know, look, God bless him, but my Uncle Vince said he really liked Act of Valor. And, my Uncle Vince is Uncle Vince, so I'm not hating on him. But Act of Valor, you can suck my dick.
Yeah, good for you. I had
Uncle Vince liked it.
I had a movie called The Odd Life of Timothy Green.
Oh, I know what that is.
Which featured Jennifer Garner and Joel Edgerton.
Yeah.
Please stop making these movies, Jennifer Garner. Please stop making movies.
No, I think she's done.
Where your womb is empty, but you need to be fulfilled. Can we stop doing that?
We've had enough.
This is a movie in which a couple is childless, but they bury a box in the backyard with all the wishes and hopes for what the kid will be.
Yeah.
And then it gets struck by lightning and a real boy emerges from the dirt.
That's completely amazing.
I wanted to punch everyone involved in this film deep in their soul.
Yeah.
And it features the single greatest line in film history. If this boy... I can't even remember the line. It's incredible. There's a line about we can make a pencil out of leaves. It's the weirdest. It's the
that. It's
awful.
Is this a thing that like Life of Pi?
I blew it. That line is so bad.
Because Life of Pi is like a premise that, you know, you describe it and you go, okay, I ain't buying a second of that. But is it just in the way that it's done that makes this not work?
Yeah, no, it's just drippy.
Oh, look, it looks awful.
The kid comes into our lives and makes us all better. And he's got leaves on his feet. Oh, that's what the line. If this boy can have leaves on his feet, then we can make a pencil out of leaves.
Of course.
Because there's a town where the pencil factory is the big job. What else? What else sucked?
I might be out of movies.
A Thousand Words with Eddie Murphy.
Oh, yeah, well.
You more than two words.
Just put an Eddie Murphy spot in every worst of list every year.
I got two words for A Thousand Words. Fuck off. Those are my two words. Hit and Run with Dax Shepard.
Yeah, I remember you hating this one.
God,
it came
was
out.
This dreck.
Yeah, I didn't see it.
I saw there were posters for it in Paris, and I took a picture of it. And I wanted to be like, Le cinéma de merde. It's the worst movie. It's so bad. It's unfunny. It's a bad Tarantino knockoff.
Yeah.
It's like a Tarantino making a Smokey and the Bandit movie.
Right.
And it's really bad. But that sounds good when I say it like that. But awful. He's got no chemistry with his actual girlfriend, who is now the mother of his child.
Yeah.
Dax Shepard. Yeah. I know he's local. He's from Walled Lake. But please stop it. And
she's local. But
she's from Hinesville, from my hometown. But you know what? Kiss my grits.
They shouldn't. Look, when you're nobody that was a star of Punk'd should be able to make their own picture, and that even goes for B.J. Novak. I don't care. You shouldn't be able to make a film. The Punk'd.
You
want Ashton?
Look, we're gonna do a bonus episode at some point.
We'll take this waltz as getting it.
We'll do a bonus episode where you talk about Take This Waltz, and I'll talk about my number four, The Dark Knight Rises.
Well, we've talked about Dark Knight
and
Rises.
And we'll both do bonus episodes. We'll just break those mood down.
Christopher Nolan is maybe my favorite director, and so I was super disappointed in that out to be a piece of garbage.
Huge disappointment.
But liberal arts, we should talk about.
Joel, how is it disappointing when your villain talks like this through a mask?
He has those giant lips.
And he's saying, I know it. Why do those make him sound like Sean Connery and James Mason fucked?
I mean, that might have been.
And had a drunk baby.
That might have been a creative.
There was a creative mistake.
The movie has bigger problems.
I am Bane. No, that come on. That ruined the whole picture.
The movie has problems.
No, it's got huge problems.
Yeah, and it's too bad because I
liked.
Much
like Prometheus.
You didn't like.
The plot
was
so bad.
But Corey, you're like the one guy who didn't even like that second Dark Knight movie, which everyone loved.
I hated that.
You hated that one too. So, I mean, I guess in a way, for me, I was more disappointed. Yeah, Take This Waltz. I've got to do something on that later. And liberal arts, look, Josh Radnor, I want to throw this at him. Where is he? Not sure where he is.
It's not on my list, but Red Dawn was terrible.
Yeah, I didn't see that. Yeah.
Speaking of the kid Josh, the kid from Drake and Josh, what was that?
Oh, Josh Hutcherson, who's in Hunger Games as well.
Awful.
Yeah. Poor Josh. All right, I know you got to go, man. It's getting late.
I do got to go.
Gotta be somewhere, so let
me wrap this up with a couple more terrible movies.
Oh, my goodness.
To throw out Alex Cross.
Well, there's a movie I'm an extra in, which I never saw.
Yeah, they shot. Oh my god!
I'm in the MMA scene. I'm one of the crowd members in that.
Actually, so. Alex Cross, I put on the worst list, but I would rewatch Alex Cross in a heartbeat to riff on.
Yeah, I'm not.
I mean, riff tracks better have this locked down.
Well,
this is the most riffable MST3K movie. It's so bad. The dialogue is horrific.
Yeah.
Everything about it's incompetent. It looks like $4. They're riding around. They're shooting rockets out of the side of the people mover. It's incredibly stupid. It was shot here in Detroit and has no sense of space or geography or that it actually existed in the city. Awful, awful, terrible. Tyler Perry looks gayer in this than he does wearing a dress.
And you thought this
he
was
looks
the
more
movie,
manly in a dress.
They were going to make a Tyler Perry movie that wasn't a Tyler Perry movie, and yet it was as bad as the Tyler Perry movies.
Dreck.
You know what? It's funny because on the set, I really like that director. His name's Rob Cohen.
Yeah,
I think he made the original Triple X and the original Fast and Furious. And he came off as a cool guy in person, but yeah, that movie.
John Carter, terrible piece of shit.
Yeah.
Taylor Kitsch. What more needs to be said? Millions of dollars spent on unlikable CGI characters and a lead actor that bounced around like a super ball in the surface of Mars. And had a lifeless performance. I mean, just awful. And the number one worst movie of the year, Joel.
Oh, you haven't even gotten a number one?
I have a number one.
Oh, my goodness.
You ready?
What's that? Prometheus.
Rock of Ages.
Well, that speaks for itself, doesn't it? Yeah, that...
Oh, dear God.
Did you even see
the
Hope?
The next guy... That
did you came... even see Hope Springs?
I didn't see Hope Springs, but I'm sure it was terrible.
It
Look,
was, yeah.
The guy, the next guy who puts Russell Brand in a movie...
No, you're right.
I will find you, motherfucker. I will hunt you down, and I will break you. I will break you so hard. This Russell Brand has got to stop. Alec Baldwin... It's terrible.
Yeah.
First of all, hair metal is an embarrassment to itself.
You know.
And then they made a movie that shamed hair metal. It's so dreadful. So awful. Tom Cruise.
Well,
over the top. Just an abomination of a film.
I
didn't hate anything more all
year long.
There's
musical movies. Because remember, you hated Burlesque, and they keep doing this. Where they make it. But then Les Mis comes out, everyone drops, you know. Everyone thinks that's
I didn't like Les Mis, but it was better than that. Oh, God. Jesus.
Yeah. Well, anyway,
sweet Lord.
We really have to talk about a movie like Take This Waltz more in the future.
Your rage about
it. And you see Sarah Silverman fully frontal nude in that, and it's still one of the worst movies of the year. So I really got a vendetta against that thing for more than one reason. But thank you. And, of course, if you want to give us your worst movies, call 610-552-0746. The newly monikered Rove Armstrong Douchebag Hotline.
Rove Armstrong Douchebag
Hotline. And you can see that on the website, too, so go check that out.
And we have a Facebook page, finally.
Yeah, joelradio.net is on Facebook, so check that out, like that. And we're also available now on Stitcher if you have a smartphone or an iPad. It's even available in General Motors and Ford cars. Go get Joel Radio on Stitcher. We'll talk more about that in future.
Go get Stitchered.
Stitcher on your smartphone. All right. Catch us later, everybody. We'll see you. Joel Radio, we're done.
Seriously, Rock of Ages.
Rock of Ages.
Cruise,
no. I will not experience it.
Somebody got paid money to oil him up. There was a guy whose job, there was an intern.
Oil him up?
They were like, he's shirtless. And they like walked around with a spritzer of olive oil. And they're like, go spritz Mr. Cruise.
It's Jeremy Renner.
If you please. So gay. Goodness. Was Jeremy Renner?
It's Jeremy Renner.
Who's putting man sauce on him?
It's what they said.
It's the worst thing ever.
Mission Impossible. All right. Good night, everybody.